Mitriamo Afurakanu Afurai Taitnut Eneye Ujirada Medinde Ujirapo Kwesi Ra Nehembata Akan Akwamumain Amaruka Etipi Mu Ujirapo. That means greetings to all Afurakani Afurai Taitni people, meaning Africans, black people. Today is Ojira Day. My name is Ojirapo Kwesi Ra Nehembata Akan, the Ojirapo of the Akwamu Nation in North America. May I say for checking us out today, we want to get a few announcements out the way. I'm opening up the chat room right now. Okay, and we have a couple of people starting to log in. If you want to make comments in the chat room, you have to log in. If you don't have an account with Blog Talk Radio, then just create an account, which is very quick, and you'll be able to create a username, and you'll be able to log in. All right, so we just want to go through a couple of announcements real quick. We did have an event. We had an event this past Akwesida, this past Sunday in Camp Springs, Maryland. It was a good event. We exchanged good information. People got a lot out of the information. There were a few people who had to cancel at the last minute, and they asked us if we were going to be having another session, another presentation or workshop or lecture in the D.C. Or Maryland area. We will be having one soon. We haven't locked in a date yet. So we'll just check the website for that. Keep up with the website because it may be something this weekend, but then we may have something the following week. Actually, we already have something booked, so it may be on the 12th. It's either going to be this weekend or it's going to be the weekend of July 12th. So just check the website, and we will be giving updates on a regular basis. The weekend of July 5th, we will be in Hartford, Connecticut, giving a presentation there. And we also will be scheduling some things in the East Coast region. Most likely we will be in Philadelphia soon, within the next few weeks, but we definitely will be in Hartford, Connecticut on July 5th. We also just confirmed a venue for Las Vegas, Nevada, of the weekend of July 19th, on July 19th. So we will be giving you some updates on that. We will also be giving you some information about our fundraiser later in the show. Okay. Give me a couple of seconds. I just want to go through some information real quick. I want to send out some information. I want to make sure people saw these links. If you have any questions, you can post them in the chat at any time. You can post them now if you want to. In the meantime, while we're checking this out, if you can download some of the documents. If you go to ojirapo.com and you go to the Nshwe Shwe Mu page, which I will post this in the chat right now. And for those who are not in the chat room, it's ojirapo.com, O-D-W-I-R-A-F, as in free, O.com/ NHWEHWEMUPAGE.html, which is Nshwe Shwe Mu page .html. On that particular page, you can access all of our documents. So every document that we have, you can access it there, but they're also on various pages on the site. But when you go to that site, when you go to that link, then you can download all the documents that we will be talking about today. So you would download the origin of the term God, Neg Ur, or Nganga Ur is not nigger part two. You'd also download a note on the origin of the term Nganga Ur. Nganga Ur is not nigger part one. You will also download the piece on Nehesu, Negus, and Nkoso, and all these links are all on the same page. Nahesu Negus Nkoso. Negus is not nigga. That's the name of the article. So, yes, we're going into all of that tonight. Also, you will download the link to the article, More Means Dead. We'll be dealing with that tonight. And also, you can check out Cuckoo Tum Tum, The Ancestral Jurisdiction. And you can download that PDF because there are some references there that we're going to deal with tonight. Okay, and I see we have some of the people lined up in the chat. There was one message I was trying to check out to confirm our guest for tomorrow's show, and we'll confirm. We'll bring you up to speed on that a little bit later. Okay. In the meantime, I want to play something, see if you can hear this. We're going to play a quick little link. It has to do with animal totems, so you will hear the animals in the background. It's going to be central to our discussion, so I'm going to play it right now and see if you send us a message in the chat. Let us know if you can hear it clearly. It's just like 49 seconds, but we just want to make sure you can hear it because this is what we're going to start off talking about tonight. So let's see if you can hear this. Let's go. Okay, so I don't know if you could hear that clearly. Let me know if somebody sent a message in the chat. Were you able to hear that? Okay, you were able to hear that? All right, so let's go to, we're going to start off with the article, part two, the origin of the term God, Nganga Or is not nigger, part two. So, and there's a reason why we were playing those geese. Those geese, male and female geese, the goose and the gander, walking together, and they were honking or cackling. So let's get into this document because this is central to the term. Now, hold on 1 second. Let me see. Okay, we see a couple of messages here. All right. All right, so let's get into this. There's a great deal of misinformation being propagated in the so-called conscious or cultural community, and that's not a good term because many of the people who identify themselves as conscious are really the definition of unconscious, which is very interesting and subversive. But there's a great deal of misinformation regarding the word nigger, nigger, naga, negus, netcher, these various terms. We had to publish a series of articles to clearly delineate the etymological and cosmological origin of these terms to show clearly that nigger, nigga, none of that has to do with the term God at all. It's not a sacred title. It has nothing to do with Kundalini energy. It has nothing to do with deities. It has nothing to do with any of that. That's misinformation. And there are pseudo-scholars, pseudo-spiritualists, pseudo-revolutionaries, a number of individuals propagating this nonsense, giving interviews, writing long posts on Facebook and other social media, sometimes publishing short little articles or, you know, doing videos, audio, even putting it as a song. The information is totally 100% inaccurate. So we go into detail to actually show the etymological origin of these terms and the cosmology that gave birth to these terms and what they actually mean. Now, the key is when it comes to this information, and we're going to get into this, the origin of the term God, we're going to, of course, the term nigger, get into the origin of the term black, Moor, Hebrew, all of this nonsense, so we can have a clear understanding. African, Africa, which we did an entire show on that. Of course, we have the book, Afuraka Afuraikai, the origin of the term Africa, where we prove conclusively that the term is not only indigenous, it comes directly from the cosmology of our people, and we show that and show the actual full term in the Medutu, in the hieroglyphics of ancient Kemet, specifically the papyrus of Ani, papyrus of Hunefer, as well as the temple of Aset in Paraka or Bale. But we're going to get into these different terms in detail. We're going to section the show up so we can make sure we get to each document and give it the attention and needs that they need. What people have not done, and if you think about this information, when you've heard this information before about nigger meaning God, nigger meaning sacred, nigger meaning divine, nigger meaning the divine serpent, a sacred name that they've been trying to hide from us because that's our power source and we need to start using nigger, all of that nonsense. If you think about it and you're just honest, be honest with yourself. When somebody gave you the information or you heard the information, did you investigate the information or did you simply listen to what they said, repeated it, or at most, the extent of your investigation was simply reading some little blurb or listening to some little video that they directed you to listen to, which was saying exactly the same thing? Did you investigate their sources and the sources that they referenced? Did you do that kind of investigation to get to the root of these issues? Because if people are honest with themselves, just be honest, you did not investigate. Because if you investigated thoroughly, you would not be running around saying nigger means God, or nigger means sacred, or nigger comes from Naga, or nigger comes from Negus, or nigger comes from Netcher. If you honest with yourself, you will have to admit that you really didn't investigate. You're just repeating information that came from someone else that was not vetted. And if we vet any kind of information, whether it's this topic or anything else, all we have to do is investigate. We should never accept anything that anyone says unless we can investigate it ourselves and get to the root of the issue. If we simply did that, 95%+ of the confusion in the community would not exist. But since we've been led to embrace authors, embrace scholars, embrace teachers, speakers, people who promote themselves as experts when they really are not, people who promote themselves as spiritualists when they really are not, as well as people who are simply cultural criminals who work on behalf of the whites and their offspring, the agents in the community. We have all these different kinds of people. We simply listen to them. We've been conditioned to simply listen to people. If it feels good to us because we've been conditioned into ignorance, so things that are misinformed that stimulate the ignorance that has been ingrained in us that makes us feel, quote-unquote, good, and therefore we say, well, this must be true because I can feel it. And then we repeat it to other people, and they feel good about it, and next thing you know, people are naming their children and naming their organizations, creating, you know, works of art all based on misinformation. So all we have to do is investigate, and the information is out there. It's wide open. We have the capacity to access accurate information, and that's what we have done with these publications. And then, of course, when you look at these publications and you investigate these sources in these publications, you can verify the information for yourself. It's not a situation where somebody lobs out an idea such as, don't believe me, investigate for yourself, that is simply a lecturer's ruse, a lecturer's trick. When they know people are conditioned to accept anything, and then they come out and give you the suggestion or lob the suggestion that, hey, don't listen to me, investigate it for yourself. I don't want you to believe what I'm saying. I want you to investigate. The conditioned, brainwashed person will simply say, well, this brother must be telling the truth, or this sister must be telling the truth, because or else he wouldn't have said, don't believe me, investigate what I'm saying. So he must be telling the truth. He must be genuine, because most people don't say that. And therefore, the conditioned person will be even more emboldened not to investigate what you say, because now you've created some air of authenticity and given some air of integrity or a level of integrity that other speakers don't have. This is why many lecturers use that terminology. They lob that little volley. Don't believe me, investigate, because they know you will not investigate. That's why they plant that suggestion. It's reverse, quote-unquote, psychology or discordant spirituality, trying to get you not to investigate by giving you something, an opposing view. What we're doing here is you have this information. We've published this information written as well as through video. We'll re-examine these documents as well as audio now. So it's on you now to take that information and investigate. What you will find is the information you've been given about the term Africa, totally inaccurate. What you've been given about the term nigga, nigger, totally inaccurate. Naga, negus, netcher, totally inaccurate. What you've been given about Moor, totally inaccurate. What you've been given about Hebrew, Asiatic, totally 100% inaccurate. And we have exposed that, and now you have the tools to investigate for yourself, and it's on you. So let's get into that first document. And the reason why we played that, we see there are more people on the in the call queue now and more people on the chat. So let's, you know what, I'm going to play it one more time just for the people who just joined, just a portion of it, and then we're going to get moving. But open in the meantime, while you're listening to this very short, it's only like 40 seconds, audio, in the meantime, download the article, The Origin of the Term God. Nganga Ord is not nigga, part two. And you can find that on the ojirafo.com website. You can download that article now. So I'm going to play this right quick, and then we're going to get into it. What that was, again, for the people who just joined, that was an audio of a goose and a gander, male and female geese, a goose and a gander. The front page of this document, the image we have is a male and female goose and a gander, a sacred achinebwa of Amen and Amenet. The great mother and the great father. Amen is the great father, supreme being. Amenet is the great mother, the supreme being. There's never been a time when there was just Amen or Amen Ra. There was never a time when there was just Amenet and Amenet Raet. There's always been Amen and Amenet. We're going to get into the cosmology, which is the infrastructure that births the terms that we speak. The terms that we speak and the words that we use in our ancestral languages are tonal, and they come from the movement of the abosome through creation. Just like you can take a rope and whip it around in the air and it creates a whistling sound. When Ra moves through creation, when Ra'et moves through creation, when Ka and Ka'et and Hehu and Hehud and Nun and Nunet, the way they move in creation generates a specific configuration of vibrations which you can listen to and replicate, and that replication of those vibrations is the actual name that's emanating from the spirit as it moves through creation. So they have these names not because we named them, but because when they move through creation, they resound this configuration of sound vibrations that make up the name. The energy that exudes from them or emanates from them literally makes up the name. So we're going to get into that as well. We had a good session on that this past Akwesi Da. At the session, we were talking about the origin of the name Ra, Ra'et with the cosmology and the Ba and Ba'et and so forth. So we're going to get into that. But Amen, Amenet, the great father, the great mother. In Akan, Ame is called Nyame. In Amenet, or Amenat, is called Nyamewa. And then you have variations of those names from west, Afuraka, Afurakai, all the way across the central, east, south, and north. Same name, same divinity across the board. Now, you see on the front cover, you have the goose and the gander. Sacred Achinebwa, which is Akan for animal totem, of Amen and Amenet. We heard the male and female, the goose and the gander, cackling or, you know, making their sound. When they mate, when they're about to mate, they begin to cackle. The male has a higher, louder pitch cackle, and the female has a softer, lower pitch cackle. And you heard both of them, and if you saw the video, if you just YouTube the video, you will see both of them walking together, and they're making the sound. Now, you will see in the Medutu, one of the titles of the goose who laid the cosmic egg, as is translated in different hieroglyphic dictionaries, two forms. You'll see Nganga, or it's spelled N-G, N-G, and Or. Or, U-R, or W-R, means the great, or great one. Or for male, Orat for female. In Akan, that same term exists as Owura for males and Awura for females. So Owura in Akan is War in ancient Kemet, meaning the great, or great one, master, great, and female, mistress, or great one. So it's spelled in the Budge Dictionary, he sticks an E in between the N and G, and it says Neg Or, meaning the great Neg. They add the E because they weren't sure about the pronunciation. Egyptologists will often use the E as a placement if they're not sure of the vowel of the vocalization. So they often put E's in between consonants when they just want to facilitate pronunciation, when they don't understand what the pronunciation really was. The actual term is not neg or neg neg or. N-G, N-G or is not neg neg or. It's actually Nganga or. Nganga is the name of the divinity. The way you can show that that's accurate is because there's another variation of the term. Instead of Nganga, there's also the variation Ganga. G-N-G-N, Gangan Or, or with the N prefix, Nganga Or. You also see it spelled Ga-Ga Or, G-A-G-A. That all points to the fact that if it's spelled G-N, it's Gangan Or, or Nganga Or. If you spell it G-A-G-A, it's Ga-Ga Or. The A is nasal. So Ga, instead of saying ga like a G-A-H, ga, ga, or, is ga, ga, or. So one way to write the name is the G, the symbol for the G, the medut for the G, and then the symbol of the what some people call a vulture, but it's really an African fish eagle, which represents the A sound, the A sound. So you have ga-ga-ur, ga-ga-ur, or you have G-N-G-N, ga-ga-ur. Adding the N just shows that it's nasal. That's the great Ganga. What does ga mean? Ga means to cackle. That's the sound that you heard the geese making, the male and the female geese. They are the great cacklers, the great Ganga. So instead of saying cackle in English, which comes from cackle or kakul, kakur, is gagur, a gangur, it comes from ancient Kemet. The term to cackle is ga, or sometimes they use the prefix with the N, ga. Now, that you see that on the first page of the document. And then we show different variations in the Medutu, to cackle, to quack, cackler, great cackler, and so forth. Sometimes Geb himself is also called the great cackler because he inherits that capacity from Amen. So we go through that. We show that in the text. Now, very important, the cosmology. Amen and Amenet at the beginning of creation is just Amen and Amenet, blackness of space that they created. Nothing else exists. They create the black waters of the black substance of space is a dark energy, dark matter. That black substance is called Ka and Kaet, or sometimes Keku and Kekuet, the way it's often spelled. A divinity floating in the black waters of space are like the two geese swimming in the primordial waters. They're the only ones that exist. But at some point, they want to create the universe. So the two geese, the goose and the gander, begin their mating call. They begin, in English you would say, they will begin cackling, and they become cacklers. In ancient Kemet, they start ga-ing, or ganga-ing, and they become the ganga-ur, and ganga-et, uret, or ura, which is amenet. They engage the cackling or the ganga process. So you'll find in the temple of Heb, which they call Hybis, in one of the hymns to Amen, in columns 23 and 24, a direct translation talking about Amen. It says, your ancient throne is the highland of Kemenu. It is from the lake of two Nines that you reach land. It is from the water surface that you appear in the hidden egg, Amenet being with you. Now, there's a couple of things that's very important. Your ancient throne is the highland of Kemenu. Kemenu is the city of the eight primordial divinities, Amen, Amenet, Ka and Kaet, Hehu and Hehu, Nu and Nu, the primordial divinities that are the pre-creation of the universe. That's what Kemenu is. But it says your ancient throne is the highland of Kemenu. Highland is actually the word kaet or kite. That's the highland. The same highland we talk about in the origin of the term apuraka, apuraikai, the highland in Kemenu, the kaka or the kai in Kemenu, where apuraikai comes from. The land upon which Ra sat to create the universe, the raised land, the high land. In this particular text, talking about Amen, it says, your ancient throne is the Kayet of Kemenu. So the first land that rose up out of this primordial waters is the Ka or the Kayet. That's the high land, the first land that became Afra Ka. This text is saying, the ancient throne of Amen is the highland. So it was created by Ra and Ra'et and becomes the throne of Amen and Amenet, because that's the second part of the translation. It is from the water surface that you appear in the hidden egg, Amenet being with you. Again, Amenet and Amen at the beginning of creation. There's no, originally we only worship the mother and the gods came later. That's pure foolishness. That comes from white lesbians, dykes. And then our people jump on that nonsense and promote it as though it has to do with the great African mother. There's always been the male and the female. Then we go to what the so-called Leyden Papyrus I-350, chapter 90. Quote, light was his coming into existence on the first occasion with all that exists in stillness for all of him. He, Amen, cackled by voice as the great cackler, Ganga Ur, coming into a land that he created for himself. He began speaking, cackling in the midst of silence, opening every eye and causing them to look. He began crying out, cackling, while the world was in stillness. His yell or his cry or his cackle circulated while he had none like him, so that he might give birth to what is and cause them to live and cause every man to know the way to walk. Their hearts live when they see him. He's talking about Amen in the beginning, in the stillness, existing in the stillness, and he cackled by voice as the great cackler. Another section, excerpt from the Leyden Papyrus, I-350, chapter 100. Quote, the one who initiated existence on the first occasion, Amen, who developed in the beginning, whose origin is unknown. The name Amen actually means hidden or concealed. No deity came into being prior to him. No other deity was with him who could say what he looked like. He had no mother who created his name. He had no father to beget him or to say, this belongs to me. He who formed his own egg, power of secret birth, who created his own beauty. So it's talking about when it says there was no other deity that was with him who could say what he looked like, and then it immediately says after that he had no mother who created his name, he had no father to beget him, and so forth, saying there was no other deity with him who could say what he looked like, meaning he didn't have a mother and a father who could say, this is my child. When a baby is born, the baby can't tell anybody what they look like. And even when you grow up, you can't tell anybody what you look like or what you were doing when you were a baby. Only your mother and father who were there with you can tell you that. So this text, when it says no other deity was with him who could say what he looked like, he had no mother who created his name, he had no father to begin him, that's what it's talking about. Just above that, we already read that the section talking about him creating the primordial egg, it is from the water surface that you appear in the hidden egg, Amenet being with you. So Amenet is there just like Amen is there. So for any fool trying to read monotheism into the Leyden Papyrus text, that's foolishness or it's just pure deception. Because if they read the whole text, they know what's really going on. If they didn't, then we proved it right here, and you have access to it. So that's critical. Now, so we show an image of Amen and Amenet. We show them the great goose and gander cackling, Ganga, from the beginning, at the beginning of creation. And then we also show the etymological origin of the term goose, which is gans in Germanic language, Old English, goth, plural guest, gandares, gans, ganse, ganter, gans, ge, gate, all these Indo-European versions, whether it's Germanic, English, Norse, Greek, and so forth, ken, gan, all of that comes directly from gan, the goose, or the gander, the great cackler. Now, scroll down some more. We have an image of Amen and Amenet in the primordial waters. It says, observe the actions of the geese when they reach maturity. About 3 years old, the male tends to be more dominant and aggressive than the female, especially in mating season. The male is more protective of the nesting area as well. Listen to the sounds of geese. The male goose lets out a high-pitched honking sound or cackling sound to attract the female when they are ready to mate, while female lets out a low-toned quack or cackle when she is ready to mate. You just heard that. So at the beginning of creation, Amen, the great Ur, Ganga, cackler, and Amenet, the great Urat, Gangaet, or cackler, Ganga Ur, the great Ganga, Gangaet Urat, the great Gangaet, at the beginning of creation. They begin to quack because they or cackle because they want to mate. Once they send those vibrations into the black substance of space, it causes the black substance to begin to expand and contract. That thick black substance begins to wave, expand and contract, and create waves. That expansion and contraction is the birth of the divinities Hehu and Hehu, bringing expansion and contraction, the life-breathing principle. He in ancient Kemet means breath, but it also means heat. It also means fire. So Hehu and Hehu, of course, it sounds like Hehu, Hehu, breathing in and out, expansion and contraction. This is why Hehu and Hehu are the divinities of boundlessness, eternity, expansion, contraction, and so forth. When Amen and Amenet first cackle, Ganga, they create that black substance, which is a thick black plasma. The whites and their offspring now call it dark energy and dark matter, which makes up 99%+ of the universe. We've always understood that that black substance was not just nothing, which the whites and offspring used to think it was just nothing or void, but it's actually a black substance within which we all exist, suns, moons, planets, stars, and so forth. That plasma, that black substance, is animated by divinity. It was created by the cackling of Amen and Amenet, the great hidden being. Amen, the root men, means hidden, concealed. But men also means stable, permanent, and abiding. So the invisible, hidden, concealed being, the stable, permanent, and abiding being, Amen and Amenet. When they decide they want to create the universe, they begin to to cackle. And that first fashions that black plasma. And they operate through that black plasma. And that cackling again causes the expansion and contraction within that black thick substance. The Hehu and Hehu, the breathing principle. Now that substance has vitality. The waves of energy moving back and forth within the black substance now are the wave energy of Nun and Nunet. That's why they're shown with a wavy line written in the Medutu. That wavy in line is the N symbol. And that is not just a symbol just because they drew it like a wavy line because it looks like a water line. When you say Nun and you listen to that vibration is captured within the picture of the wavy line. It's the energy that emanates from that force in nature, Nun, as well as Nunet. When they move through creation, they emanate that kind of vibratory frequency. So we replicate that when we say it, Nun and Nunet, and that creates a magnetic field that draws Nun and Nunet to us. And we also replicate it symbolically by drawing that wavy line that goes up, down, up, down, up, down. The energy that moves through your body when you say Nun, it's that same vibratory frequency. So their name has to be Nun and Nunet because when those spirits move, they create that sound. If you listen to the spirits move, spirit possession, divination, different forms of ritual practice, their movement gives off that vibratory frequency that when you replicate it, it is the sound Nun and Nunet. So we talked about, and we also use the analogy of a pot of water. If you have a pot of water, of course, that's still on the stove and you add heat, hehu, hehu, to it, he meaning heat, he meaning breath, he meaning fire, then the first thing that happens is the water begins to wave. It expands and contracts first, hehu and hehu. First it was still, a still substance that could take any form, just like the black substance of space can take any form, but it's still. But then when you add the heh, or the heat, the fire, the breath, the expansion and contraction to it, then it begins to expand and contract within that water. First there's an expansion and contraction, and eventually you begin to see waves going back and forth from one end of the pot to the other, energy moving back and forth through the waves. That was the birth from heh, hu, and hehut to Nun and Nunet, the wave energy, the wavy line energy. those wavy lines begin to wave so rapidly and converge so rapidly that they give birth to a rumbling sound, and eventually spheres rise up from the wave energy, spheres of heat and fire, which are bubbles, and they rise up out of the pot. So from noon and noonet, the wave energy, when they unite, they give birth to spheres that rise up out of the blackness. Those spheres of fire and light are Ra and Ra'et, who pierce the black substance of space for the very first time, create light in the darkness. Their movements, their spherical movements, these spirits moving through this black substance begin to carve out black spheres, which become the first black bodies, which have become the first stars, because all stars, according to physics, of course, are black bodies. Their energy penetrates those black spheres and enlightens them and enlivens them. One of those spheres, of course, was our sun, our Aten and Atenit. And, of course, the portions of the sun, the projectiles came out, became planets and so forth, and we know the rest. But we want to focus on the fact that Amen, the great hidden divinity, man, hidden, stable, permanent, abiding, hidden. Amenet, the great hidden, permanent, stable, and abiding mother. When they wanted to mate and create the universe, they began to cackle, Ganga Ur, Gangaet Urat, and this is their title. Now, if you scroll down through, we have a number of representations of that. Ga also means to sing, a musical instrument, to sing, to praise. There's a difference between ga with an open aspirated A and ga, which is nasal. That ga gives that extra in vibration. So you have to sing, musical instrument, to praise, and so forth. If you keep scrolling down through, you'll also see gan, and gan meaning to cry out, to beg, to beseech, to petition. And then it also shows it's a kind of bird. Now, what's also important next is ga or gayet, meaning a bottle. Also can be a wine pot, but a vessel. Ganu or gangu, meaning metal pots or vases, and those are used to pour out the liquid, whatever, whether it's wine, whether it's water, whatever the liquid is, it's used, the ga or gai is the pouring out of that liquid from that pot, the gai pot, you pour out. The term gash in Kemet, meaning to spill, to pour out, to sprinkle, a pouring out, an inundation. Ga, to pour out from the wine pot, gash, a lot of pouring out or an inundation. Gosh is the origin of the English term to gush. So if somebody gets shot and they're gushing blood, or if a water main is broken and the water is gushing, that comes from the ancient term from Kemet, gosh, meaning to spill, pour out, pouring out, an inundation. The root of it is ga, meaning to pour out. Gosh is inundation, a great pouring out, gushing. So when you look at the two lips of the vessel in Gai, you see the wave energy pouring out. It's a stream of water pouring out in the same wave energy of the letter N in ancient Kemet, that wavy electromagnetic line. It's not a smooth, wavy line like a smooth, watery line. It looks like a number of N's linked together, like an electromagnetic wave, because that's exactly what it is. So the two lips of the pot, from those two lips of the guy, is the water pours out. And that's the determinative. It shows that in both words. So that's why we say the two lips of the vessel, guy or gan, releasing the water or energy as guy, releasing the water, are related to the two lips releasing the invocation, ga or gan, when crying out, petitioning, with regard to Amenet and Amen cackling or ga or gan. So we also say the wavy water energy pouring out from the lips is related to the energy activated in the waters of the blackness of space. The waters of noon and nonet, when they are stimulated by the ga-ga or ganga cackling of Amen and Amenet. The invocation is a release of energy, a pouring out of energy, necessary for the birthing of the universe. So just like we pour libation with a pot, when you're pouring out of that, that pot is actually called gan or gan, and the lips of the pot pouring the water out is gan or gan, and then the pouring out of energy from the lips is gan or gan. A cackle is a release of sound vibrations. It's a pouring out of sound vibration. That's what Amen and Amenet were doing at the beginning of the creation, the jumpstart creation, to begin that process. And we go through a little bit more etymology there, and then we show, here's the key, the origin of the term God, Proto-Indo-European so-called roots. The whites and their offspring trace the term God back to two roots, Goh, meaning to pour, Goh, meaning to invoke. They don't know why Goh means to pour, Goh, call or invoke. And those two different definitions being related to, rooted to the word God, they don't know why it means that, but that's, those are the two definitions they come to. And then they say they don't understand which one is which. It could be one or the other. We just proved in the cosmology of creation, the pouring out Ganga, the releasing, the invocation. When Amen and Amenet began to cackle, that is an invocation, invoke. Voke means to call. So an invocation is to call from within. So when they chant, just like you heard the birds, the geese at the beginning of the show, they cried out into the black substance of space, and the sound vibrations began to make that black substance wave and move and expand and contract. That was an invocation, Ga or Ganga. And they are called Ganga or the great Ga. It means to call or invoke. But it's also the term for pouring, to pour libation, God. So you have both terms with the exact same meanings actually as titles of Amen and Amenet. So Amen is the great God, God or, great or God, God meaning the great God or the great God. Amenet is the great Gaet or God. She's the great Urat, meaning great, Ganga, or Gan, God, or Goddess, later in English. So to pour or pour libation, Gan, to call or invoke, Gan, in Proto-Indo-European, Go means to pour libation, Go means to call or invoke. We can show the connection between calling, invoking, and pouring because of the functions of Amen and Amenet as the great Ganga Ur and Ganga Uri at the beginning of creation. This is the origin of the term God. It's directly related, directly derived from our practices. We have the same process, the same language in the Akan language. The Akan people, of course, in Ghana and Ivory Coast, about 20 million Akan people in West Afrika, migrated directly from ancient Kanat or Kanit land, which is a title of Nubia. We migrated west and reestablished ancient Kanat or the Ghana Empire, the Akana Empire, thousands of years ago. After Muslim invasions, some Akan people migrated south to the forest belt and reestablished Akana or Ghana civilization. And some of those Akana people were taken from that region and forced into enslavement in America. So this is why you have many Akan people in America, just like you have various other ethnic groups, Yoruba and others in America. The Akan people speak the Akan language, which is often called Tree. And there are two important terms in the Akan language. Go, which means to pour, to sprinkle, as in to pour libation. Go. You also have Go, as in a go, an invocation, an announcement before one's enter a house, a call for attention. You may hear at certain cultural events when people are trying to get the attention of a group, they yell out, Ako, and the people respond, Amen. That's a call and a response coming from the Akan language. Ako means, that go means, may I have your attention. Listen to what we're saying. Everybody come together. It is a call to order. The people respond by saying, Amen. We are listening. We are at peace. We are focused. We are attuning to you. We're focused on you. This is a call and response. However, first and foremost, it's not just a call to order for a group. First and foremost, it's a ritual call to order. When we pour libation, when we engage the Oshue process, the first thing we do be standing before Inyame and Inyamewa, meaning Ame and Amenet in ancient Kemet, Inyame and Inyamewa Nakan. The first thing we do is say, Ago, and the people respond, Ame. And we say, Ago, and they respond, Ame. And we say, Ago, and they say, Ame. We invoke first. We say, Ago. Then we take the vessel that we have the water in or the liquid in, and then we pour libation. The pouring is gul. So the first thing we do is say, Ago. That's an invocation to the Supreme Being, the Great Mother and Father. And after we Ago and invoke, then we gul, we pour. Go and gul. Invocation and pouring. Invocation and pouring libation. We invoke the Supreme Being, and then we pour. Again, you have the go and the gul, pouring and invocation. Go and go in Proto-Indo-European, one meaning to pour, one meaning to invoke. Ga and ga as titles of Amen and Amenet. They invoke by cackling, by ganga-ing, and then they pour those vibrations out of their lips, just like the lips of the pot. The pot itself is called ga. The cackling is called ga. This is the origin, pour, invoke, call, and so forth. It's all together. So when you have an Akan person raising up a vessel to the sky, and they say, Ako, that's the first go, that's the first cackle, and then they goo, they pour. Instead of saying English pour, it's goo. So they say go and then goo. It's a replication every time an Akan person pours libation of the creation of the universe. First, we invoke, just like Amen and Amenet did, by cackling, by ganga-ing, akal, and then we go, we pour libation. We release the sound waves and release the water from the pot, from the god. So all of that we detail in the article. We show the cosmological foundation for Amen being called the great Gan, the great Ganga, the great God, the great invoker, the great pourer, and Amenet being the great Gaet, the great Gangaet Tes, the great goddess, the great invoker, invokeress, the great pourer, libationer, and so forth. And then, of course, the reason why the Akan yell out, Ago, and invoke, and the response is Amen. That is a ritual replication of the creation of the universe every time we pour libation, using the exact same terms from ancient Kemet and Kanit to this day. If you have any questions on that, let me see. I see a few comments here. I just want to scroll up, make sure I didn't miss anything. A lot of comments here, actually. Okay, let me scroll through real quick. Okay, a lot of comments. You had a question. I'm still not clear where you cannot put a vowel between the N and the G. And what is the key indicator to let others reading Medut and Toto know when to place a vowel between letters and when to pronounce the letter together? Okay. So that's a good question. We addressed that in part one of this same article. Ganga is the root. The root is ga. And it's really G-A, and the A is nasal, so sometimes they write it with the G and the African fish eagle. Some people call it a vulture. Ga, but sometimes they'll write it G with the G and the N, and then the Europeans may put an E and say gan, but it's really ganga-or. We know the vocalization, where the vowel should be, sometimes based on the Medutu themselves. If you have some, you know, currency with the languages of Afuraka, Afuraikai today. The vocalization still can be found in our contemporary languages today. So we show in part one of the same article that the Ganga or Nganga, which is the doer, the invoker, in the Bakongo tradition, the ritual specialist who chants and engages the process through ritual invocation, ritual chanting. His ritual sound vibrations when he prays and chants moves matter. He's called Nganga, which is a doer or maker. The root of Nganga is Gang or Ganga, meaning to make, to do. Ganga is the root, and the ritual specialist is called Nganga. What is the Nganga in the Bakongo tradition? The ritual specialist through chanting or kanting or kanging or ganging, chanting Nganga, he makes matter move. The same with an Akan priest, Yoruba priest, and so forth, the ones who are actually authentic. That title, Nganga, from the root Ganga, comes directly from the titles of Amen and Amenet, Nganga and Ganga. Through their invocations, their release of sound vibrations, they make the black primordial substance move. They make matter move. Through the languages of Afuraka, Afuraikai, and the cosmologies of today, that we find the proper vocalizations and various and variations in the vocalizations. Like, for example, in the Akan language, you have the term Oba, which means female. In the Asante dialect of the Akan, in the Akwamu and Ekwapem dialect in Akan, Oba becomes Obea. So the first A becomes the high-pitched A becomes an E. Oba means female in Asante, Twi. Obea means female in Akwamu and Ekwapem Twi. So there are slight variations even between inside of ethnic groups. But we have the various vocalizations. You'll find the ancient vocalizations from ancient Kemet, the proper vowel placements in the languages of Afuraka, Afuraikai today. You'll also find Coptic vocalizations in the languages of contemporary Afuraka, Afuraikai today. So between Coptic, as well as the languages that are being spoken right now, you will find the same terms with the same meanings, multi-layered meanings, intact. You'll find the same deities with the same names and the way to actually pronounce the names of the deities. And we're going to get into that very soon in the next publication. Okay, so let me know if that answered the question. Okay, and if anybody has a question on the phone line, you can just click on the number one. Okay, and you said Obenga states that the beauty of African languages is that they sound just like they're spelled. So Nga is pronounced Nga, et cetera, plays. Okay, half. Okay, so you were just clarifying that point, right? So Nganga, and you can find it. It's one thing to, you know, find different variations, but have the same term connected to the same ritual specialist with the same function and creation that has the same effect on created matter, Nganga from the root Ganga, and then you see in Kemet, you have the version with the N prefix, Nganga, but then you also have the version without the N prefix, which is just Ganga, sometimes G-A-G-A, then it's a clear cognate. It's not just linguistic, it's ritual, it's cosmological. And then most critically, yes, you can find it linguistically, yes, you can find it cosmologically, yes, you can verify it very easily through that comparative analysis, but the most important is when you engage the culture itself, when you engage the ritual practices, when you actually engage the Abosom, you engage the Orisha, you get possessed by the Abosom, you get possessed by the Vodou, you do divination and communicate with them, and they show themselves to you, they show themselves to people in your community, adults as well as children, and you're really actually dealing with these divinities that we talk about and read about. People in ancient Kemet weren't just drawing pictures of anthropomorphized aspects of life force energy. They were being possessed by deities just like people get possessed by the Orisha today. They were getting possessed by deities just like we get possessed by the Abosom today. So we were actually dealing with the forces in nature. We weren't just some, pseudo-scientific empiricists just, you know, collecting data and making up myths. All right. So that's the piece on Nganga, Nganga Ur. And we, in the document, parts 1 And part two, we go into great detail showing that these various terms come directly from ancient Kemet, what deities, these are titles of deities, titles of Amen and Amenet, as in Ganga Ur. So let's go a little bit further down in that particular document, because we also address the term spelled NTR. And here's another example of you asking about vocalization. People say, well, how do you pronounce the term? Some people say Neter, Neuter. In Coptic, you'll see Nute. That's one variation. Ha Nute, and so forth. In Akan, you'll find that NTR is pronounced N-T-R. And then you'll also find in Ebe is T-R-O or T-R-O, T-R-O. We pronounce it N-T-R-O. It's a divinity. The N-T-R-O, also called the Ejabosom, is the deity that we inherit through our patrilineal blood circle or patric clan. N-T-R-O-N or N-T-O-N, the female version, is the Abusiabosom that we inherit through our mother's matric clan or our matrilineal blood circle, meaning Apurakani, Apurakani people are connected to the forces in nature by blood. There's no such thing as the deities are just universal energies and all people have access to them. That's totally 100% inaccurate. The whites and their offspring have no access to the forces in nature. No deity will possess them, never have, never will, ever, impossible. No deity will possess a white Hispanic, a white Latino, white Latina, white Asian, white pseudo Native American, who are simply Asians who migrated here when we were already here and invaded here, when we were already here and waged war against us, when we were already here. After we had migrated from Afuraka, Afurakai, we migrated here thousands of years before the Asians existed. And when they got here, we were already here. We did not originate here. This is not some Moorish nonsense where we pretend like we originated in America. We originated in Afuraka, Afurakai, and migrated to the different continents. The Asians came much, much, much later. So no divinity has ever, does not now, nor will they ever possess any non-Afurakani, non-Afurakai individual. Anytime you see them engaged in spirit possession or doing some kind of ritual with some unseen entity, that is one of their deceased, discarnate, perverse white relatives or a discarnate, perverse non-relative, just a wayward, disorderly spirit who died, who's still hanging around certain areas, certain people, and they will possess people when people are open to them. They will try to pass off the possessions of some drunkard who died as an alcoholic, and their spirit is still hanging around and will possess somebody. They'll say, the deity just possessed me. Oshun just possessed me. Ogun just possessed me. If the spirit is acting a little angry and yelling and trying to grab a weapon, they'll say, look at Ogun. You know, he's a warrior. That's pure foolishness. None of these whites and their offspring have ever connected with any divinity at all because they do not have a kra. Okrawa, Kao Kaya. Of course, we got into that with the book, the Okrawa Complex, The Soul of Akanfo, and we have a video on that as well. Okay, so we just wanted to deal with that. N-Toro, Netter, N-Toro, it's really N-Toro. That's how it's vocalized in Akan. In the European languages, the way they read it, N-T-R, and they began to say Neuter, Neter, and Netcher. In English, that becomes the term nature. And, of course, they will use the term Mother Nature, meaning the Great Mother, in a sense, even though they don't know who the Great Mother is. So Neter became corrupted into the English nature. And we just want to show a link there. So we have in Kemet, you have N-Toro, N-T-R. In Akan, you have N-Toro. That's how we vocalize. In European languages, you have nature. In Kemet, you have ga, to invoke. In Akan, you have go, invocation. In European languages, you have go, or goi, meaning to invoke. In Kemet, you have gain, meaning pour, libation. In Akan, you have go, pour, libation. In the European languages, goy, pour, libation. That's showing that nature, or ntoro, which they say nature, is not neger. Some people try to say, well, nature is really neger or nigger, and that's where it comes from. But we just showed that ntoro is one word. Nature is where that comes from. But it's not the same as nganga or. Now, let us look at the term. In fact, let's look at the, if you go to page 11 in the same document. And we're going to go through this part a little kind of quickly because of the cosmology we already explained. So the rest of it just details that cosmology and gives you some detailed information. Plus, we have other articles associated with it. So we show the Nganga Ur, Ntoro, which they pronounce Necher, Negus, and Naga. And some people try to say Neg Ur, but it's really Nganga Ur, Ganga Ur. That's a title of Amen, and I'm in that. Necher, really Ntoro, that's another word, a totally different word. Negus is a totally different word. Naga is a totally different word. They try to say that all four of these words are the origin of the term nigger, and nigger means God. These are four different words with four different meanings, and none of them have anything to do with the word nigger or negro or nigger at all. Okay, so we go through this kind of quickly. Gan, as we said, is doubled as ganga, also nganga. The root is ga or ga. Ga is not the term nigger. Nganga or is not negor, is not nigger. Ntoro or netter, ntoro, is nute in Coptic, ntoro in Akan, toro in Ebe. Ntoro is not the term nigger. Negus or nagas is derived from Nkasa or Nkesu in ancient Kemet, written Nkoso in Akan. The root is Kos or Koso. Koso is not the term nigger. So Negus or Nagas, Ngas is Nkasu in ancient Kemet. That's where the Ethiopians, when you're talking about the Ge'ez language, later on, one of the terms for Nubians is Nkasu. That's the term for Nubian. That whole article, Nehesu, Negus, and Nkoso, we go into the origin of that term. So when you look, for example, in the temple of Ramesu III, and they have the four quote-unquote races that were you could find in ancient Kemet at the particular time, they would show the Rautu or Ramatu, the people of ancient Kemet. Then they would show the Amu, the foreigners, the Amorites who invaded, who were invaders. Then they would show the Nkasu, the so-called Nehesu, or Nubians. And then they would show the Tamahu, who at that particular point were invaders, whites and offspring, who had invaded from Western Asia. The Nhasu, or Nhesu, very often, again, they would stick the E's in between because they didn't know how to pronounce it. It's really Nhasu. In Coptic, you will find the vocalization Hoth as the root. Nhoth, or Nhasu, plural, is the term. Nhasu comes from the root Hoth. And Akan is Nkoso, the same term, same meaning. The root is Koso, the N prefix makes it Nkoso, but the root is Koso. Koso is not nigger. What they don't understand is when they see negus or nagas, it's really Nkas. The root is, again, Kos or Kos. It's not nigger. So we go into that. We also show that there's a title of Ra in the book of the Cow of Heaven. When they're talking about Ra taking the form of the divine light, he's called Ra-Aku or Ra-Aku, Ra-Ak is the title of the creator. It says that title is found in Akan. So Ra-Aku or Ra-Ka becomes Ra-Ka Daka, Nanka, in Akan, various different variations, the Nanka serpent or Edanga, Ananga. You'll find variations of that. That's the great serpent, Ra, the serpent with the tail in its mouth, the circular serpent, Raka, Daka, Nanka, and of course, Nyanka, Nyanka Pong, is the great Pong, circular serpent, Nyanka Pong in Akan. Nyanka Tone is the great arch Tone, serpent, Nanka in Akan, that's Ra and Raet. That comes directly from a title of Ra, Ra-Ku or Ra-Ka. That Ra-Ku, Ra-Ka, Da-Ka, Nanka, that's where you get Nanga and Naga in Tamil, the Tamil language of ancient India. Naga is just a variation of the way they pronounce Ra-Ka or Da-Ka from ancient Kemet. Ra-Aku or Ra-Aka is not nigger. It's not, Naga has nothing to do with nigger. Naga, the N is really the rolling R. Ra-Ka, which pronounced quickly as Ra-Ka or Na-Ka or Naga. It's just Ra-Ak. And we show the actual Medutu on the page. So you can see that difference. Okay, give me 1 second. Hold on 1 second. Okay, so we just wanted to go through that. And then if we, so when you look on that page, you look on page 11, we show Ga in Kemet, Ga in Akan. Ntur or NTR in Kemet, some people say Neter, Ntoro in Akan. Kasu in Kemet, also Nkasu in Akan is Koso or Nkoso, where the Nehesu or Nehasu people come from, the Nubians. Ra-Aka becomes Da-Ka or Nan-Ka in Akan is Ra-Ka in Kemet. These are four different terms in the same language. Ga, a title of Amen, the great Ga or Ganga. Ntoro or Neter, so to speak. Ntoro, another title of divinity, a word in ancient Kemet. Kasu from Nhasu, a word in the language of ancient Kemet. Ra-Ka, a title of Ra in ancient Kemet. These four different terms have nothing to do with the term nigger. They are not different terms from different languages all pointing to the root nigger. There are four terms that all exist in the same language with different meanings, and none of them have to do with the term nigger. Some people will try to say Neter again is Netcher, Nedger, and nigger. Totally inaccurate. It's really Ntoro. Gan, we already showed that Kosu is the root of Nkosu or Nagasu, which later became Negus when they pronounced it later on, thousands of years later. It has nothing to do with the term niggas. That's foolishness. And, of course, Naga is Ra-Ka. So we go through that. In the Tuareg people of North, Central, and West Africa, Afrikai, since ancient times, has referred to the Niger River as Ger in Geren. The term Ger means river. Ger in Geren means the river of rivers, meaning the great river. That's the Niger. The root is Ger, G-H-E-R, Ger. Some people tried to say that a fragment of the phrase Ger in Geren is the root of the term Niger and nigger. In reality, ger, meaning river, comes from the term ger or gar in Kemet, meaning stream or river. And we show the Medutu for that. So, the term for the Niger, which is ger in geren, is really from the root ger, meaning river or stream. You find that in the Medutu of Kemet. And then we showed the various other terms that people associate with the origin of the term nigger. 100% totally inaccurate. So every person that you've heard on YouTube, every person that you've heard on Blog Talk Radio, every person that's been putting things out on the internet and putting little documents out talking about nigger is divine, every one of them have been 100% inaccurate, totally false. And if we simply investigated, we would have found that out a long time ago. But we have not been investigating, and this is what we need to do. Now in this document, we go into the origin of the term nigger or nigga, negro, and so forth. This origin can actually be found in the language of ancient Kemet as well. If you look at the term negro, knight, nigger, of course, necro, as in necrology, meaning study of death, or necropolis, the dead city, necro, and so forth, death, corpse, dead tissue. The roots of necro and negro and neck, necked or knight, all go back to neck and necru, also negative, meaning, you know, not good, and so forth. It all goes back to neck, necru. It means to lack, to want, negative, all these things, lacking, wanting, and all of that. The terms in Kemet you'll find is nekan, to be lacking, wanting, not having. Neka, lack, want. Nekan, injury, affliction. Neka, foes, or crushed, or beaten to death. Foes or enemies who are crushed, beaten to death. Affliction, all this negativity. So when you look at the term nekur and nek, the root nek, and nekau or nika, you'll find that it means foes or enemies who are crushed to death, those who are lacking, those who are wanting, those who are injured, those who are afflicted, those who are enemies, those who are being crushed or beaten. And then you have nekur, meaning sifting, dust, powder, that's which is sifted, what is crushed, pounded. This is where you get the term, the root neck, as they say, the Proto-Indo-European root for Negro is neck and neku, and the word for night, meaning dark, is neck and neku. The word for negative, the root of that is neck, neku. That's because you find neck and nekau in ancient Kemet, meaning lacking, wanting, negative, injury, afflicting, foes, enemies, crushed, pounded, beaten to death. So a neka, as we show in the language of Kemet, in the Medutu, neka, meaning nigga, a negro later on, are those who are crushed and beaten to death. So anybody referring themselves to themselves as nigga, thinking it's divine, what you're really saying is, I'm an enemy who is crushed and beaten to death. I'm weak, afflicted, injured, sifted, crushed, pounded, and so forth. This is the reason why the whites and their offspring use the term that they learned from us as a pejorative to extend it to all black people, because it means those foes, enemies who are crushed and beaten to death. So that article goes into detail about all of that. We wanted to highlight that cosmology so you have an understanding of that. Before we move to the next document, let me see if there's any questions. Okay. So I see a little discussion going on. All right, let me take a call right quick, and then we're going to get into this More Means Dead article. But let us take a call right quick.
Hello?
All right. 7730 BPOO. Got a question or a comment?
I'm going to put my hand down. I'm in the middle of the area.
Okay, you just listening?
Yeah, just put my hand down. Yeah.
Okay. No. Okay. Okay, so somebody said scroll up. Let's see. Just want to see what I missed here. All right. Okay, so somebody said, are there any literature, metaneta, or images of the great goddess Amunet? Yes, actually, in this article, on our webpage, on numerous pages on our webpage, we have an image of Amen and Amunet sitting together. We have an article talking about the origin of the name Nyame. We show Amen and Amunet sitting together. Actually, in this article, the origin of the term God, on page 3, we have an actual image from the temple of Apet Aset, and it's Amunet and Amen sitting together. Okay. So I just want to see what other questions came out. Okay, somebody says Medu for water is pronounced N-N-N, or a holding of the sound and letter. Right, so it's the sound is N, that even when you say N, the air rises up, goes up the trachea. In order for it to come out properly, it comes out through the nose, nasally, but it also comes out through the mouth. So it's going up and down between the nasal cavity and the mouth. That up and down wavy line that you see going up and down, up and down, up and down, when you say N, the vibratory frequency is going from the top to the bottom, top to the bottom, top to the bottom. That vibratory frequency is the sound that you hear when you say the N sound. And this is why Nun and Nunet have that name, because that's the energy that emanates from them when they move through creation. And so all we do is repeat the energy that's emanating from them. Okay, so you said that what contemporary languages are best to use to corroborate Medu Ntoro or Medu Neta, because some folks use Chiluba and other African languages to quote-unquote their premises. How can linguistic novices know who? You can use the various languages. The vast majority of Afro-Aikani, Afro-Aikaini people speak languages from the family, which they refer to as Niger-Congo languages. There's really just like a three-part breakdown of the languages on the continent. You have the San people, like the Khoikhoi San people, Khoikhoi and San, the so-called Bushmen. They speak the Click languages, ancient languages, languages of the forest. The languages take on the nuances and the sounds of the nature spirits in the forest. And because they are attuned to those nature spirits, they replicate what they hear and they communicate in that fashion. And that comes from the Twa people, that comes from, you know, Motia and Akan and different, you know, Iwin and Yoruba, different groups. All right, so that's one language family, ancient language family. The vast majority of people speak what they call Niger-Congo languages. Some people call them Congo-Saharan. We would call them Kong languages, K-N-G, like Western Kong, Central, and Eastern. About 90% of the people on the continent speak languages from that language family. Then you have Berber, which is at root our languages, but then there's so much other mixture because of the invasions from the north. The original Berbers, of course, were black people, but the whites and offspring began to invade thousands of years ago, got a foothold in certain parts of North Afuraka, Afuraka, the northwest. They've been there for a couple of thousand years, so there's a lot of infiltration, a lot of corruption. But 90%+ of the people on the continent speak what are referred to as Niger-Congo languages. That includes Chiluba, that includes the Kwa languages like Yakan and Yoruba and Ewe and Igbo and so forth. That includes the Mende languages, that includes the Bakongo, that includes the languages like IsiZulu and Lotsi and various languages that most of us know about. West, Central, various parts of East, Afuraka, Afuraikai, it includes all those. So any one of those languages, in reality, any one of them, when you go into the roots of those languages and find these words, you will find the exact same terms, as well as the descriptive types we find in Kemet. You will find the proper vocalizations and different variations of vocalizations, because we are the same people who migrated from these areas, from the Hopi area, and migrated to different parts of the continent. We're not just talking about the Proto-Saharan region. We're not just talking about when the Sahara Desert was an aquatic lake over 7,000 years ago and dried up, and then we moved to the riverine areas like the River Ngaden or the Niger River and the Zambezi and the Hopi. Even prior to that, we look at the records of our Nsamampo, for example, as contained in the Papyrus Turin, as they call it, the king's list, the list of sovereigns. It will talk about the rule of the Ntorotu, the divinities, the rule of the Aku, the ancestresses and ancestors, and then the rule of, you know, beginning with Mena, of the actual people. That rulership goes back to 42,000+ years. When our people used that time frame, that was not a mythical time frame. We have been operating in that area for over 42,000 years and even beyond that. But when they're talking about the organization of a particular kind of society beginning about 42,000 years ago, that's what we're talking about. So we were there. We're not talking about the more recent Saharan aquatic culture, which later dried up about between 7,000 and 9,000 years ago, and then caused us to locate back to the Nile River and Niger River and so forth. Before that happened, thousands of years before that, we were in the Kanit, Nubia, Kemet area. So we're saying that to say that the parent languages from that region are the languages we carried to West, Central, and South Africa, and East and North, and also into Southern Europe, the so-called Near East, and into India and so forth, and eventually into North, Central, and South America when we migrated there. So you can use any of those languages to get to the same result. Okay, so just want to go through some of these. Okay, you asked about the Leyden Papyrus. They didn't necessarily have the reason the White Narrow Spring give it the names, you know, they name it after the place where they found it or the person that found it, and they're trying to catalog it, and of course they put their own stamp on it. The people themselves wouldn't call it, hey, this is the, say, for example, the Ani Papyrus per se. If it was found, it was given in the tomb of Ani and his name was in it, they wouldn't necessarily call it the Ani Papyrus. They would just, it's the Runu Pert Nemiru, it's the so-called book of the coming forth by day, and it would be placed in the tomb for Ani, and his name would be mentioned in it because it was with him, but it wouldn't be called, this is the Ani Papyrus. It's the same thing with the others. The Europeans started naming the papyri in that way. But we would just, you know, it could be called a hymn to Amen or invocation of Amen, things like that. Okay, so you said, and you mentioned somebody, you know, trying to present that Negus meant God. The key is people didn't know what is the origin of the term Nehesu or Nhesu or Nhatsu, meaning Nubians, in ancient Kemet. They didn't know what that meant. They couldn't connect that with the term Negus or Naga, and therefore they began to run with a bunch of just nonsense, foolishness, because of a lack of investigation. Because if they simply investigated the term Negus, even if they didn't know that it was related to or comes from Nhatsu, they still wouldn't arrive at, well, Negus is the origin of Negus. If they did just a cursory investigation, they would have ruled that out very easily. So people are just not investigating, and we've been conditioned not to do so. We've been conditioned to listen to charismatic speakers and people who sound intelligent, and we repeat their nonsense so we can feel like we're intelligent. Or like we have some information nobody else has. All right, so I'm just going through these comments real quick before we move on to the next document. Okay, and somebody said they were surprised when Kaba Kamini, Professor Booker Coleman, tried to explain it. All right, that's just easy. Just one of many. He has a couple of videos out online talking about the origin of the term nigger, and he goes through a whole story and talks about the swastika and all these different things. And everything he said in the couple of videos going into these various derivations were 100% totally inaccurate, every bit of it. So, but people just don't investigate. If they investigate it from the time he opened his mouth and anybody else repeating it, if they just said, okay, he said this, let me go read it. Let me go find it. Let me look in the text to see if it's there. It wouldn't be there. So we just have to start investigating. So it looks like we went through all of that. All right, so let's get into the document. Some of you have, but you can download it. More means dead. Now, we just talked about Negro and the root neck, neku. Foes are enemies who are crushed or beaten to death. So people who foolishly identify themselves as Moors, which is a foolish designation, which we show in this article in detail, some of them say, well, I'm not going to call myself Negro because Negro means dead. And in reality, it does, you know, it is rooted in that notion. They'll say, I'm not going to call myself Black because Black means death. That's purely idiotic nonsense, no truth in it whatsoever. Black does not mean death. They'll also say that we don't call ourselves African because Africa comes from Leo Africanus or Scipio Africanus or, you know, some other foolish, definition, which is totally inaccurate. And we showed that in the document. We showed that Leo Africanus only lived about 500 years ago, which is a different individual from Scipio Africanus. And Scipio Africanus took on the name Africanus after he invaded Africa, Africa. And we proved by showing in the chef Ani or the papyrus of Ani, the chef Hunefer, the papyrus of Hunefer, the actual term Africa, referencing the first landmass created by Ra at the beginning of the world. So their contention that Black means death is pure foolishness and Africa is not a original term. And of course they want to believe that they come from Asia or ancient America, some nonsense like that. We actually show the origin of the term Moor. And Moor actually means dead. So they say they don't want to call themselves Negro because Negro means dead or Black means dead. But actually, Moor means dead. So we go into detail about this. The 29-page article, very detailed. You don't have to go through every single page, but we can, you know, examine the basic information so that as you read through it and you investigate it yourself, you'll be able to get this information very clearly, and you have some clarification, and you'll be able to, it'll be a springboard for your own research to confirm and verify the information. So some Moors used to just say, you know, Moor doesn't mean Black. Moor means, you know, they have a number of different definitions that they got directly from the etymological dictionaries, looking for the etymologies of various terms. What they didn't know in the past is that these dictionaries do not give the full etymological root terms. They stop with Proto-Indo-European because they don't want to show that these terms actually existed in Afurakani, Afurakani languages, specifically in ancient Khmer. The Europeans understood that. They knew that it did. They knew that these words are rooted in the ancient language, but they couldn't show that because then it would just destroy their whole false notion of white supremacy that they are trying to force on our people. And before we get into this, I just wanted to let people know we did mention upcoming events. We mentioned July 5th, next weekend, not this weekend coming up, July 5th weekend, we will be in Hartford, Connecticut. July 19th, we just today got a confirmation for a venue, Las Vegas, Nevada, for July 19th. We've been trying to get a venue for a few weeks now. We were having some issues. One of the individuals sister who is working on it, put in a great deal of footwork, a lot of, you know, hard work, and we were able to nail down, or she was able to nail down that venue. So we appreciate her, all of her hard work to get that done. What we are doing, as we always say, when we do our presentations in different cities, we do not charge organizers a speaker's fee for us to come out. We also do not charge attendees to our events an admissions fee. You come to our event, the event is free. We don't charge the people. We don't say, well, if you bring me out, you're going to have to pay me $1,000 to speak, or I'm not speaking for any for less than this or that. We don't charge, period. The only thing that an organizer would cover is the cost of the venue, if there is a cost. Sometimes the venues are free, sometimes they're not, and the travel expense. Unless it's a place that we're driving to a few hours away and then there's no travel expense at all. So if they have a free venue and they don't have to cover travel expense, the entire affair is free for the organizer. If somebody asks us to come out and there's a flight and, you know, travel expenses involved, then they will cover that and possibly a venue if the venue has to be covered. Outside of that, you know, we come out, we don't charge, and we've been giving away a free copy of our book, whatever book we were speaking on that particular day. Out of the 7 soft cover versions that we have, we would give a free copy of the book to everyone who comes out. We just had an event this past Apoisida Sunday, just a couple of days ago, in Camp Springs, Maryland. It was a good event. We, you know, gave out the free book. We had a good exchange. We were talking about a number of different things, especially with related to the language, the names of the divinities, ancestral communication, shrine work, different things. And we're going to, for those who came on the call later, for those who contacted us and they had to cancel that at the last minute and asked us, are we going to have another event in the D.C., Maryland area? Yes, we are. We haven't nailed down a date. Possibly the weekend of July 12th will be the date. We will update you on that, so just, you know, keep that in mind. For this event that we just confirmed, the venue in Las Vegas, what we're doing tonight is we're having a fundraiser to help with the travel expense, and we want to also give away free copies of the book. So we're going to type in the link to our Achedie page for those who are on the call right now, or in the chat room, ojidafo.com/Achedie, which is A-K-Y-E-D-E, page.html. So anybody, if you value the work, if you want to make a purchase of one of our soft cover publications, one or more, they only cost between $8 and $11 for the soft cover versions. All the PDF versions of the books are free online, but we're having a little fundraiser so we can raise the funds. We got the venue is covered. We need to raise some funds for the travel expense because no matter what, we're going to maintain our practice of not charging for events. Most people are able to, you know, get speaker fees and things like that because they charge people $10 to get in, $15 to get in, $20, $25 to get in, and so forth. And then they collect that money and use that for travel expenses and speaker's fees and stuff like that. We're not going to do that. We're not going to charge, and we're also going to give a free copy of at least one of our books away. So in order to cover that you know, process, that project, as well as the expenses, if you want to make a contribution on our page, get out there, we thank you, because we're trying to get that, you know, the funds raised so that we can, you know, get the flight, get the travel expenses, as well as the, you know, supplies. We print our own books in color in-house on our own printers. So we get the materials to print out, you know, a number of books so we can give those away, as well as covering the expenses if you can make that donation or make a purchase. And you can share the books. I know some of you have read the books already. You can get an $8 book or a $10 book and share it with somebody as a birthday gift. Or another term, afuraka, afuraka, or whatever, whichever one you want, or more, and that'll be people love those gifts as well. So, yeah, I'll say for that. But we are trying to have, you know, a fundraiser tonight because we would like to, you know, nail down the flight and travel arrangements as soon as possible. All right, so let's get into this document, More Means Dead. Some of the Moors, of course, we talked about, they say Negro means death, Black means death, all of that foolishness. Negro does mean death, but Black does not. All right, so they were running that for a while. Then some of them became industrious and started looking into ancient Kemet and the language of ancient Kemet, and they found that the cognate MR, Mer, is spelled in the Medusa as MR. Very often they were sticking E in between it or an O in Coptic, just depending on the dialect. But in the Medusa, typically it would be spelled MR, Mer. The Egyptologists will often stick an E in between it, Mer, and so forth. And the Moors found that in the language of Kemet. And they said, wait a minute, Mer is in the language of Kemet. That means the people of ancient Kemet were Mers or Moors. So Moor is an ancient title, and we're the inheritors of the culture of ancient Kemet. We're the ones who kept the culture. Now, of course, none of these people have anything to do with that. Either Black people in America were descended from people of West and Central, primarily Afuraka, Afuraikai, just like everybody else, and they're taking on a fictional identity to make themselves feel good. Based on nonsense, who's coming from white Arabs, white Turks, who only have disdain for our people and want to brainwash us into embracing the false religion of Islam, the fictional characters like Allah and Muhammad and these other various characters, sometimes trying to blacken them up, sometimes not blackening them up, but you know, it's all foolishness. It's all mind control. It's all controlling the spirit so they can dominate us physically and spiritually and intellectually. So some of them found the term Mer and saw it as a cognate for the term Moor in English. And they started saying, well, Mer means, you know, the land of Mer, Ta Murray or Ta Mary. That's the land of Mary, or the land of the Moors. So Ta Mary means the land of the Moors, and therefore the people of ancient Kemet were Moors, and Moor means Egyptian. It's pure foolishness, but that's what they want to believe. So they started looking through the text. Many of them found other things in the text that they did not inform people about. And we put this information out. We know they found it, and we know that they didn't repeat it, because it would destroy their entire foundation of their pseudo-identity. And, of course, they didn't put it out, but we put it out. And it has destroyed the foundation of their pseudo-identity. And once we put the information out and people began to study it and investigate it and verify it, which they have, of course, it went viral and tens of thousands of downloads for the article, and it's just nonstop. We've had people who are sheikhs in Moorish organizations who left those organizations alone and started embracing real Nanasom Afurakani Afurakaiti ancestral religion because they learned some real information, and they've rejected that nonsense. So let's go through these definitions, and we'll show very easily what the real origin of the term is. We show from the beginning, Mer. M-R, sometimes they stick the E in there. Mer means, number one, collection of water, pool, and so forth, flood, and so forth. It also means swampy land. Another term for Mer, ancient Kemet, desert plain, wasteland, desert land, wilderness. These are all, we show the actual Medusa, a funerary chest or a coffer. Mer, to be sick, to suffer pain, to grieve, to be sad, to feel sympathy for someone, a sick man, Mer, illness, pain, sorrow, cruelty, grief, fatal disease. Mer, meaning death, to die, dead. Mer, as far as dead people, the dead, meaning the damned. We also have Mer is a title of pyramid. You call a pyramid Mer. Pyramid, which is a sanctuary or a shrine for the dead. Now, if you look in the etymology of the term Moor, and they trace it to Proto-Indo-European roots. You look at these four definitions that they have for the term moor. Number one, a waste ground. Number two, a morass, a swamp, swampy area. Number three, a sea, collection of water, which floods the land. Number four, it says perhaps related to mere, or from the root mer, meaning to die or dead land. So you have waste ground, a wasteland, morass, a swampy land, a collection of water, and dead or dead land. These four definitions for moor in the European languages going back to Proto-Indo-European so-called roots. The same four definitions, desert land, swampy land, collection of water, dead and dead land, you find in the Mendutu of ancient Kemet, mer, desert land, wasteland, mer, swampy land, mer, collection of water, mer, dead, to die, dead land. Now, why would it be a dead land, a swampy land, dead land, wasteland? If somebody said, hey, you wanted to buy some arable land, you wanted to engage the nation-building process, okay, we have some fertile, arable land, we want to sell it to you for a few thousand dollars. You go out to see the land and it's a swamp. You're not going to purchase the land because it's a wasteland. You can't grow any food there. You can't survive like that. You can't plant crops. You can't plant, you know, yams and things like that in a swamp. It's a wasteland in that regard, swampy land. When it refers to dead land, a collection of water, on one hand, mer meaning collection of water, a flood, and so forth, a sea, as they would say, a morass. What does that have to do with mer meaning dead or dead land? If you did have a fertile plain, or if you had a large agricultural project, and you had 100 acres of land, and you were growing corn in America, or wheat, and then there was a hurricane, and then there was a huge flood, and it flooded your entire land and buried your entire, all of your crops, all the way above to the point where you couldn't even see the tops of the crops. And for days and days and days, your entire field was underwater. What would happen when the water receded? All of the crops would be dead. That would be a dead land. That would be a waste land. This is why the collection of water, when you have the term moor, waste ground, moor, morass, or swamp land, moor, a collection of water, sea, moor, meaning dead or dead land. That's in the European quote-unquote root. Exact same four definitions, mer, desert land in ancient Kemet, with the Medutu for the desert land, mer, meaning a swampy land, mer, meaning a collection of water, a flood, mer meaning dead, dead land, damned. So that proves that the term moor does not come from any Proto-Indo-European roots. The same four different definitions for the same word in the European languages, you have the exact same word with the exact same four definitions in the language of ancient Kemet. What we're going to show is the cosmology that gave birth to the term. Europeans don't know why mer means dead, but it also means a collection of water. It also means a wasteland and also means a swampy land. They just know that's what it means. They don't know why it means that. In our culture, we not only have the same definition, but we actually have the cosmology that birthed the definition. It's the infrastructure. But before we get to that, we also have the term in Kemet, mer. This is the fifth definition, to desire, to love, to desire. And Meru means lovers or friends, but you're talking about desire, beloved, and so forth. What you'll find in European languages is amor means my love. So we already have four definitions of moor: swampland, wasteland, collection of water, dead land. Same four definitions in Kemet. Now the fifth definition in Kemet, mer, meaning love, desire, talking about sensuality, affection, desire. And then amor in the European languages, meaning my love. Again, they got that directly from ancient Kemet. What is the association with mer, meaning love or desire, and not love in the true sense, but desire, and mer, meaning death? In the Akan language and culture, there's a proverb that translates love is death. And on one hand, it's talking about when somebody is having that kind of affection, not love in the sense of divine law, which is the real definition of love, but love in the, or desire, magnetic attraction, affecting your physical body and so forth. And if you don't not near the person or something goes wrong and you're not mature, then all that desire, magnetic attraction leads to stress, anxiety, heart stops, your heart is weak, your heart is anxious, your heart's sick, love sick, quote unquote, and it makes your heart stop when you get into conflict with the person who's the object of your affection. That's why the Akan say love is death. In ancient Kemet, the term mer means love, desire. Mer also means death. Mer is mer. Love is death. So even in the proverbial wisdom in the Akan culture and the actual language of Kemet, you will find that as well. We're going to get into the cosmology of Kemet and how it's all related as well. But we also show amor in European languages in the etymological dictionary, and then we show amer, which is a version of mer. You have mer to love, desire, amer to love, desire, amer becomes amor in European languages. We show that in the article on page 5. So that's the fifth definition. Now, a sixth definition for more. More means to moor a ship, a mooring post. So when a ship arrives in a port, you disembark from the vessel, and then you tie the ship to a mooring post. You moor the ship. It means to fasten the ship. Why do you moor the ship or fasten it? So that once you get out the boat doesn't just sail back into the water and crash into something and get destroyed or sail away and never come back, because the water can just be moving and cause the ship to find, you know, float away. So when you arrive in port, your ship docks in a port, then you disembark from the vessel, and then you tie it up or you moor the ship. That term moor, more or moor, mooring a ship, you find in ancient Kemet is in Coptic mune, and mure is still the M-R. Sometimes they use an M-N, but it's the same word. Mure, mune, the rolling R, mure, and the N, mune, is the same word. In the language of Kemet, it means to tie up a boat in port, to lead a boat into port, to tether, to tie, and also a mooring post. So we show that in the Medutu. Ships or boats or shipping in port. Moor, mer, mure. So that's the sixth definition. Six definitions of the same word in the European languages, the exact same six definitions in the language of Kemet. Now, before we go forward and we tie all this together with the cosmology, if you want to listen past 11 o'clock, you need to call in because the actual live stream will cut off at 11 o'clock. And the call-in number, hold on one second, call-in number 657-383-0635. So if you want to listen, continue to listen, call in now. You only have a couple of minutes. You have less than 3.5 minutes to call in, so you can continue to listen past 11 o'clock. We won't go too long, but we just want to get into this. All right, I just want to check to see if we had any comments. All right, so that sixth definition, to moor a ship, tying the ship once the ship arrives in port, and then in Kemet, mer means boats or shipping in port. And then you also have mera, which means dead things, dead, and so forth. and to tie a ship. Now, mer, mera, mer, to die, mer, boats or shipping in port. What does shipping and boats tied and fastened in a port, mer, which in European saying more, what does that have to do with mer, meaning death? In ancient Kemet, it was a riverine society. One of the terms for death is mera or mer, and it means to arrive in port. When a ship arrives in port, we say that's mer, mera. It also means to die. One of the ways we said a person just died, we say the person has arrived in port. They have died. In so-called African-American parlance, we've reversed that whole concept and flipped the entire meaning. So we'll say when something good has come, we'll say my ship just came in. In ancient Kemet, when somebody died, they'll say they have arrived in port. They'll say that they have arrived in port, meaning they died. It was a riverine society. So when you look at Ra in the boat of the Aten, the sun, he's sailing from the east, sailing across the sky, and setting in the west, in a boat, in the solar boat. And then when the sun sets, then the sun penetrates and goes down into the earth and disappears, and there's darkness. The sun sets in the west. That's the land of the west land or the waste land, the dead land of the dead, the gateway to the ancestral realm. The sun goes into the land, deep down into the earth, and then there's blackness for the 12 hours of the night. Ra sailing across the sky in a boat. The sky is seen as a mass of water. So if the sun is going to sail across water, it has to be in a boat so the fire won't be put out. So you're in a riverine society. People deal a lot with shipping. So when Ra's sunboat sets, that's the end of the day. That's the entrance to the ancestral realm. We are referred to as children of the sun. So we're called living sons, just like the Bakongo say, the living sons of vitality and things like that. Even in so-called African American parlance, when somebody dies, and you have an obituary, they say the sunrise, they give their birth date. Sunset is when the date of the person that died. That goes back to the Bakongo tradition and various traditions on the continent. We are children of the sun. We rise with the sun. And when our sun sets, that means we have died. In ancient Kemet, when the sun set, it also set in a boat because it was a riverine society. So people would say, his sun has set, meaning this person just died. He has met his sunset. That's how many people on the continent say it. In ancient Kemet, they would say, he has arrived in port, mera, or mer, meaning he has died. And the term mera, meaning to die or death, it also shows a boat. Sometimes it shows a boat. Sometimes it just shows the mummified body. And it means to arrive in port, to die, mer. It also, merat, meaning dead thing. That's the noun version. The death cry, the mera cry. And then mera or mer also means the marrying post. When you die and your body is buried in the ground, it is tied to the ground. It's tied to Asase Afur. It's tied to the earth mother. We don't just leave the body so it just can roll around outside and animals can come and drag it and so forth. We have burial practices. We tie or fasten the body back to the earth mother. When the ship, and then once you die and your body is fastened, the vessel is fastened, then your spirit disembarks from the physical vessel. Your spirit leaves the vessel. Your spirit leaves the body. The exact same thing happened in ancient Kemet when the solar boat set in the west in the land of the dead. Then the inhabitants of the solar vessel disembark from the solar boat, the day boat, and then they go into the underworld. The same thing would happen in a riverine society. When people are, you know, on ships and they're fishing and everything else, at the end of the day, their ship would arrive in port, and then you would tie the boat, you know, the ship, the mooring post, you would moor the boat, and then the people would disembark from the vessel. This is why we said, living in a riverine culture, one of the euphemisms for someone dying is he has arrived in port. His vessel has arrived in its final resting place. It's about to be tied. It's about to be mared or moored. He has died, and now his spirit is going to disembark from the vessel. So that's the association with mered, death, and mere ships or boats arriving in port. Again, six definitions for the same word with the exact same meaning. So we go into that a little bit in the piece in the next few pages, and then we get to the key point that ties the cosmology together. All the various definitions begin to be tied together. The term mer, when referring to a person or a group of people, we just showed the various definitions of what the term means. But what about when it's applied to people? Because the Moors say, well, we're Moors, and the newfound, you know, pseudo-information is Moor comes from the language of ancient Kemet. A few decades ago, they weren't saying that. But when some of them started looking in hieroglyphic dictionaries and found the term Mer, and it had similar the same definition they found in the European dictionaries, etymological dictionaries, they tried to make a connection and say the ancient Egyptians were Moor. We just showed the six definitions of the term Moor: swampland, wasteland, collection of water, dead land, my love, love means death, mer meaning death, and also to moor a ship. But what about when the term is applied to people? This is getting to somebody referring to themselves as a mer or a moor. Well, there are two ways it's applied to people in ancient Kemet. To living people, mer means a servant, a peasant, a slave, a bondsman, someone who's bound, a bondsman, in bondage, servant. Male, there's a male version, mer, female version, merat, or merat. It also means weak, wretched, afflicted, a number of different things. You will find in the Akan language, mere means afflicted, weak, stricken. Merel means sick, weak, feeble, infirm, dejected. The exact same term, merel in Akan, mere in Akan, mer in ancient Kemet. This is referring to a people, living people. When those people, when somebody dies, the class of people who die and refer to mer, plural, meru, which in English would be mers or moors, but meru, plural in Kemet, it means dead. The dead, but not just any dead. It means the damned, that group of people who died who were spiritually discordant, spiritually disaligned, so they're not just called the regular dead, they're called meru, spiritually damned, spiritually discordant. So these are the people in life. Mer means a servant, a peasant, a slave, a bondsman, somebody weak, wretched, and so forth. They're tied or bound to their lot in life. That's what a slave is, a bondsman. They're bound. They're not free. They can't break the bonds and do whatever they want. They're enslaved. They're bound. Just like a ship is bound or moored, it's tied to its lot in life. The person is tied to their lot in life. When they die, and that class of disordered spirits, they're also called mer, meaning to die, and meru, those dead people who are damned. And the medut, the determinative, for that word, that title, is a man with an axe, and he's driving the axe through the middle of his forehead. That's showing disorder, disalignment, spiritual perversity. You'll see that on page 11. And then we have some more, you know, information regarding that, just to give you additional information. Now, that's the only time you hear about mers, or quote-unquote moors in Kemet. It means those who are literally dead, mer meaning dead, the dead people, but specifically the damned dead people, the spiritually disaligned, disordered, deceased ancestral spirits, criminal deceased, as well as just disordered, anxious, disaligned spirits, But in life, the only group of people in Kemet referred to as Mer or Meres or Meru or quote-unquote Moors are the slaves, the socially dead people. You have physically dead people, and you have the socially dead, which are slaves, those who are bound to their lot in life. This is where the term Moor comes from, dead, socially dead or physically dead. Now, when you get to page 13 and 14 in this document, now we get into the cosmology. There are two divinities, Merit, Shema, Merit, Met. Merit of the south, Merit of the north. Merit, remember we said a collection of water, a flood, deities of the inundation of the river. It rarely rains in Kemet, so they're totally dependent on the river swelling. So every year the river would swell and flood the land, the inundation. And once it flooded the area, it would be flooded for a while. And then a few months later, when the waters would recede because of the black silt that had been carried from the south up into Kemet, that black silt would be deposited, this fertile black silt would be deposited on the banks of the river, and therefore people can go out and plant their seeds, and then later on they would have abundance. But at the time that the flood would come, it could be as long as or wide as 10 to 12 miles in certain areas, 600 miles long. So you have a flooded area. If you could imagine 600 miles of a flooded area, that's like driving from Chicago to Mississippi, and the whole area, that whole length, that whole 500-mile, you know, stretch was flooded. 10 miles in width and 600 miles in length. At the beginning, it appeared to be what was happening at the beginning of creation when there was no land. Everything was just water. That's what it looked like. It was returning to the first time, but it was also a flood. Now, when you have land and you have crops, and again, when the water comes and floods the entire land and stays there for weeks and weeks and months, what happened is your crops just became buried. The crops that were still there died. They were submerged. They were flooded. They were inundated. It's one thing for, you know, a landmass to flood or a region to flood, but if you had houses and crops in the area and the whole place flooded, you wouldn't consider that a happy time. All your land was destroyed. It was buried. It was buried under the water. Merit, Shema, Merit, Met, the goddesses of the inundation, the divinities of the inundation. South and north. So we'll read from this part of the text so you can get some context. Page 14, middle of the page. We just talked about that part. When the river would flood, Meri Chimon, Meri Met were the spirit forces who presided over the swelling or pregnancy of the river. Meri Chimon, Meri Met. Note in Akan, the term Merim means to swell as in the swelling of a river. To the dwellers along the riverbanks, it appeared that the entire country had been inundated. It appeared as it was in what is called the Septepi of the first time, the beginning of creation. In our cosmology, we recognize at the beginning of creation there was no land, only water, so we mentioned that. And we talked about the origin of the term Africa in that section. So every year during the inundation, the Kamal were reminded of the cosmology when Meri Met and Meri Shema, these deities of the inundation, presided over the pregnancy, swelling of the body of the river. A large portion of the land was buried or submerged underwater. This was a form of death. The plant life was submerged. The land animals living along the banks retreated. The land was buried, submerged for a period. However, when the new season came, it was time for reemergence or rebirth. The land emerged from its submergence, burial, or death. The plant life was resurrected. This recalled the story of Al-Sar, the Ntoro, who was killed, buried, and resurrected. Ritually, this recalled the notion of initiation being a process of someone going under, dying to the old self, and resurrecting as a new individual with new responsibilities, such as priesthood, and much more. It also recalls the fact that when men and women were in conflict with regard to their love relationships, the desire, mer, for their significant other manifested as the flood of the rivers of blood in the body to the heart. One's heart would then be submerged, flooded, become heavy with anxiety, would pain them, and he or she would feel like a death, mer, has occurred. Love is death. Mer is mer. The heart would freeze or stop. There may even be a flood or inundation of tears, crying. Resolution of conflict, however, would bring an end to the heavy or quote-unquote dead heart. A rebirth or restoration of balance would occur as the heart would begin to palpitate at its normal rhythm again. The tears would cease. The flood waters would recede. So when somebody's in a mer, quote-unquote, love relationship and there's conflict, then there's a flood of tears, an inundation, there's a flood of blood to the heart. The heart becomes heavy, flooded with blood. It stops. You feel like your heart has stopped, so to speak, becomes heavy with anxiety. Love, mer, is death, mer. But when you get back to normal, then the heart becomes light again and you begin to operate in a normal fashion. When the flood came to ancient Kemet, everything was buried, everything was submerged. They say the beginning of the flood was the star Sepatit, which is the eye of Ra. It's called Aset Sepatit. In English, it's called Sirius, the brightest star in the sky. It would move into position. They would say that was the eye of Ra, it's the star Aset Sepatit. Aset operates through that star. She's called the eye of Ra at that point. A teardrop would fall from the eye of Sepatit, that great star that Aset operates through. She was crying because of the death of Asar. So the teardrop would fall from that great star. When it moved into position, the teardrop would fall. That would be the beginning of the year. The teardrop would fall into the river and cause the river to swell. That was the cosmology. So when they would see the star Sirius or Sepatit move into position, they would say, okay, this is the coming of the great divine teardrop, and they had a ceremony called the Night of the Drop, meaning the night of the divine teardrop from Aset, Sepatit. That teardrop would fall from that bright star, fall, quote-unquote, into the river, cause it to swell, and cause the inundation and the flooding because of her compassion or her crying over the death of her husband. Her love, Mer, was associated with his death, Mer, and that caused the Mer, or the inundation, of the river. This is all cosmology. All right. So it is important to note that in Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani culture, death in and of itself is not seen as evil or as a curse. Death also is not the opposite of life. One is born into the world, we live in the physical world, then we go through the gate of death and live in the ancestral world. So death is the opposite of birth, but life is continuous. You live, you die, go through the gate of death, live in the spirit realm, go through the gate of birth, live in the physical realm, go through the gate of death, live in the spirit realm. So life is continuous. Birth and death are the two gates. Now, we also talk about Meru, the pyramids, our distinguishing feature of ancient Kemet. Anybody in the ancient world coming across the horizon and coming into seeing ancient Kemet for the first time, the first thing they see are the Meru, the pyramids. Each Mer was a colossal, structure. So they would call this the land of the pyramids. No other land had these. So it could be called Ta Mer or Ta Meru, the land Ta of the Meru, the pyramid. That's not, uncommon. The Meru are magnificent structures which define an aspect of Kemet. The yearly inundation governed the entire economy and social life of the people. This is why Kemet could be referred to as Ta Meri, the land of the inundation. It's also related to the land of the Mer or the pyramid. And we go into detail about that. In both instances, we are referring to death, Mer, submergence, burial, inundation, shrines for the dead, Meru. This is why those who died were referred to as those who arrived in port, Mer, Meri, Merah, like a boat docking and being moored, Mera. We also mentioned that's not without precedent to refer to a land as the land of the dead, because the Sudan, Ethiopia, is called Ta'aku, meaning land of the ancestral spirits or the beatified dead. Now, we also mentioned a text, and there's a lot of information in here. So, we said Mer means pyramid, Mer means love or beloved. So when we talk about the Aku, the ancestors and the ancestors, they were our beloved Mer, deceased. We therefore built our beloved Mer, dead people, Mer, pyramids, Mer. So Mer means beloved, Mer means dead, Mer means pyramid. The beloved ancestors and ancestors are Mer, beloved. They're dead, Mer, and they live in, their spirits are connected to pyramids, Mer. So that's more association with the cosmology. Now, however, societally, those who were engaged in self-destructive lifestyles were referred to as being dead, Meru. Those who were slaves, servants, prisoners of war, convicted felons, for example, were tied, Mer, like a mooring post, to their lot in life, and thus those whom they served. In contemporary culture, we often refer to those who are tied or addicted to drugs as dead and, you know, engaged in self-destructive behavior. In ancient Kemet, if somebody was engaged in self-destructive behavior, they would be called the living dead as well. So we quote from the instructions of Ptah Hetep to prove that. As for, he says, as for the fool who does not hear, he can do nothing at all. He looks at his ignorance and sees knowledge. He looks at harmfulness and sees usefulness. He does everything that one detests and is blamed for it every day. He lives on the things by which one dies. His food is evil speech. His sort is known to the officials who say, there goes a living death every day. One ignores the things that he does because of his many daily troubles. So just like we refer to somebody who's engaged, we call them mentally dead because they engage in self-destructive activity. In ancient Kemet, they said, there goes a living death every day. Because he engages in self-destructive, ignorant behavior on a regular, he's a living, dead person. Mer, slaves, bondsmen, Mer, Meru, and so forth. So, when the whites and their offspring came to Kemet, they learned the term Mer from us. They learned that the term was used to refer, when you're talking to people, as either the slaves or the bondsmen or the vassals, the afflicted, the sick, the fatally sick, the disease, the wretched, Mer, and those who already died, who died in a negative sense and were spiritually discordant, even as ancestral spirits, they were called Mer, or Meru, who was spiritually discordant. So they recognized that term Mer was dealing with a living person, meaning they were socially dead or a living death, or spiritually referred to the damned, the negative deceased. They knew that was a pejorative term. So they took a pejorative term that was used in our language and used it to call all black people that. They just decided we're going to call all of them Meru, or all of them slaves. When the Arabs invaded and Europeans before that invaded and they were able to take control of certain areas and enslave some of our people and force us to work for them, they called them Mer, Moor, slave, bondsman, vassal. And when they died, they were afflicted, feeble, infirm, spiritually discordant spirit, more dead. Now, we go through all of that. We show the cosmology. And then, of course, you come to the term more, referred to people. And it has to do with, we just showed exactly what it means. Can it be associated with the term black? Yes. It can be associated with the term black because, number one, they got the term from black people in ancient Kemet. So they knew, you know, it came from our people. But it also refers to the dead, the damned. Even the title of Set as the damned one is Mer, talking about his function in the spirit realm. So it's a pejorative. They understood that black is associated with death to the extent, for example, Hossar is the great black one, Tom Orr, the black soil substance of earth. So when he dies, he gets murdered, and the country is overrun by Set, the red one, which is the desert land. The desert land is ruling. The black land dies. Then there's a torrent of water, an inundation. Offset cries. The tear falls into the river, and the river begins to swell. Netit Shema and Netit Met, the inundation of the river. So the entire country begins to flood. The whole country is buried. It's like in Hurricane Katrina, even though a lot of the other stuff was some fake nonsense, there was a hurricane. And any hurricane or any flood, when the whole city floods, the whole region of the territory floods, everything is buried, everything is lost, everything is wasted. So the whole country floods. It becomes a wasteland or a swampland, a morass, and so forth. A dead land, mer meaning dead, submerged, dead, buried. But at the same time, from the south, there's black silt that's carried to the north. And eventually that black silt is deposited on both sides of the river, the banks of the river. So when the water recedes and it's no longer buried, that black silt is now left over and it's fertile and rich and you can plant in that. That means the black one, Tom Orr, Hossar, had been thrown into the river and his body was carried up into the north and he was found on his side. Then Offset and Tehuti, and eventually Heru comes to resurrect Hossar. So ancient Kemet, the Kam-Ur, the black land, was the land that died, buried by the water, the inundation, but then it was resurrected every year. So Hossar is shown with black skin, but he's also shown with green skin as Watch-Ur, the great green one, and Kam-Ur, the great black one. Green skin dealing with the black soil substance of earth when it's fertile, but also that black soil substance when it's carried by the water during the inundation, before it's time for the resurrection. The land dies. The black land, Kemet, dies every year. The desert takes over. But then the floods come, and then land is buried, and that black land is buried. But then when the waters recede, then the black land reemerges, and then there's a resurrection. So it is the land of the inundation, the land of the burial, the land that dies and is resurrected every year. This is why it was called Ta Meri, meaning dead land or the submerged land. A feature of ancient Kemet was the Meru, the pyramid. So it could be called Ta Meri, the land of the pyramid. But it was also the other feature of Kemet, which was different from the other lands that people lived in the area, was that it was something different about this country. It didn't rain there, but every year the whole country flooded. And the flood lasted for months. And then the people would later come out when the floodwaters receded and would plant their crops. It was the death and resurrection of Hossar. The whole land was dependent on the death and resurrection of Hossar. It was the land of the land that died and resurrected every year. It was Ta Meri, the land of the inundation, the land of the submergence, the land of the burial, the dead land that would later resurrect. So we show the different versions of the term Ta Meri with the determinative of the desert land or the wasteland. That doesn't mean the cultivated land. It means the desert land or the wasteland, meaning the dead land, the land that becomes submerged. The determinative using the notched palm branch, which is talking about a specific season or a time. And in the first definition as well, it has the palm branch, the notched palm branch, which has to do with a season, a particular time, talking about the time of the inundation, and it has the desert land, medut, for a determinative. The second version of Ta Meri has the notched palm branch again, talking about a time period, the time of the inundation. So this Ta Meri means the land of Meri, meaning the land of the Meri time, the submergence time, the dead time. Third version of Ta Meri has, again, the notched palm branch. And then the fourth definition, instead of the notched palm branch as a determinative, it has the mer symbol, which is the collection of water. showing that it's the land of the inundation. Inundate means to flood. Inundate means to be buried by water. It doesn't mean the beloved land. It doesn't mean the cultivated land. It means the land of the time of the burial, the submergence, the flooding, the land that dies but later resurrects. Ha-Meri is the dead land. When it's flooded, it has died. When the flood waters recede and the black soil shows up and then the green shoots begin to pop up, then it came back to life. When Asar is buried in the water, he's dead. But then when the waters recede and he's resurrected, then he comes back to life. Ta Meri, or the time of the flood, is the dead land. Mer meaning dead. So if somebody tried to say, well, it's the land of the Moors, it's still saying the land of the dead, but it never was the land of the Moors in the first place. We just proved Moor means dead physically, societally, socially. It also means dead physically as in the spirits who are damned. So that's the key to that information. And then there's a lot more information in the article, because that piece right there, we'd only gotten to page 18. It's actually a 29-page document. And we're just going to more information, knocking out these other false definitions of more. They would try to look at different things. So we just knocked that out. So if you read through the rest of the article, it just clarifies a number of things. It also goes into the origin of the term black and Afuraka Afurakai, which also is attached to our book, The Origin of the Term Afuraka Afurakai. So let me see if there's any callers. You can raise your hand, hit number one, look in the chat. Probably going to have to do a part two for this because we're already at 2.5 hours, but we dealt with the origin of the term God, showed that Nganga Ur or it has nothing to do with nigger, naga, and all that other nonsense. And we wanted to give you that cosmology, the origin of the term more. So we'll probably do part two next week with regard to this, because we still have to get to, you know, some of the other detailed information. All right, so I just want to look through this. So somebody mentioned the More people, and that's the second half of the document, and More means dead, and we go into that. Let's read right quick for that section. More again means death. So the land of the, remember, Mer means wasteland, desert land. Dead, Mer, Meri. So this is why you have Meni, which means the land of the west, the land of the western mountain, gateway to the ancestral realm, but also the land of those who had died, Meni. This is where you get Mari or Meri from. It's the dead land, the western land, and so forth. They have different variations of it in the quote-unquote Amorite areas, the Amu, but let's show right quick. Okay. If you get to it starts on page 25, and we go into detail about that, the kingdom of Mari and all of that stuff. We say the term Mer, also Mar, is also found in ancient Sumer, later called Babylon. Sumer was an ancient Afurakani Afurakai civilization founded by migrants from Afuraka Afurakai over 6,000 years ago. The migrants from Kanit and Kemet, who established what would later be called Sumer, of course, brought their language, culture, and cosmology with them. This is why the term Martu, also written Marta, means west. West is the dead land. This is the same term from Kemet, Amen, Amenta, Amerata, meaning west. The general term Amen and Kemet means hidden or concealed. When the Aten, the sun, sets in the west and sinks below the horizon, it becomes the hidden Aten, the hidden sun. The west was thus called the hidden land, Amet. ancestral realm was also called the hidden land, Ament. We show the Medutu for that. Those who are in the hidden land, the Amen land, Amena land, Ameta land, are those who are in the west, meaning the dead. Amena, the dead man. Meta, dead things, the dead. The death cry. Meta, or Meru, the west, the country of the sunset. You'll see that Meru and Menu, the rolling N and the R are the same language, the same term, are interchangeable. Meta, so let's read that portion on page, if you look on page 26, we show the Medutu for that. Now it says, as quoted above, the Aten rises from the mountain range called Bakau in the east and sets in the mountain range called Menu in the west. The term for the western mountain range, the region where the Aten dies, Mer, arrives in port, Mer, is called Meru, and has the same roots as the term man, dead, hidden. The name Meru, or Menu, related to Amenu, becomes Maru, or Martu, and Marta in Sumerian, meaning west. A description of the people of Martu, or Marutu, later referred to as the Amoru, or Amorites, can be found in the Sumerian text. So the Meratu people, or the Mera people, they know no grain. The Meratu, or Mertu, who know no house nor town, the borers of the mountain. The Meratu, who digs up truffles, who does not bend his knees to cultivate the land, who eats raw meat, who has no house during his lifetime, who is not buried after death. They have prepared wheat and gunund, which is grain as a confection, but an Amorite, Meratu, will eat it without even recognizing what it contains. This is from the Sumerian text by Chieda. So that's the quote. We have the quotes there, the citation. So we have, again, an association, ancient association, the western land, Merat or Meratu, in Sumer, is the same in Kemet as the Mera land, or the Meru land, or Mena, the land of the dead, the land where the sun sets, the land of the denizens of the west. The western land is the Menu. The western land is the land of the dead, the Meru. The western land is the land where the ancestral spirits, the people, the spirit disembarks from the boat as the sun sets in the west, and they're called Mera, Meratu, Meru, and so forth. In Sumer, the Mera or Meratu people, Mera means west, and the Meratu are the socially dead, the boars of the mountains. They don't cultivate themselves. They don't. They're criminals. They eat raw meat and all this other stuff. These are the Europeans, whites and offspring, who invaded that area later. But even before them, it's still the western land, the dead land, Mera, Meratu, and so forth. Term Meratu of Sumer is descended from the term Merat, the socially dead of ancient Kemet. And we just read a description of the people and how they're defined, they're socially dead as well. We talk about the Amaru, which is the Ameru, Meru, the dead people, later called Amu, or quote-unquote Amorites. We show pictures of them and all of that. Moreover, we say the name Meratu is related to the name Mera or Meri, which was a city-state to the west of central Sumer. Remember the west, Mera, the west, the land of the dead, setting sun, Mera. Mera or Meri, which was a city-state to the west of central Sumer and situated on the west bank of what is now called the Euphrates River. It's important that it's the west bank where Meri is situated. It flourished about 5,000 years ago. Why is the west bank in ancient Kemet in the eastern part, on the east bank of the river, you have temples, places of learning and all that. On the west bank of the river is where you have the Meru, the pyramids, the tombs, the sanctuaries of the dead. Just like you have that in the Mera or the Meru, western side of Kemet is where the Sanctuary of the Dead is. Ancient Nedi, a city-state to the west of central Sumer and situated on the west bank of the river, this is where the term comes from. Afurakani people who migrated north from ancient Kemet. The name Nedi, directly related to the later Neritu or Meratu, also references the west, the land of the setting sun, the dead. The names Meri, Meratu, Ameru, or Amuru have their etymological roots in Meri, Mera, Menu, Meru, and so forth. They reference the west as a geographical region, but most importantly, the aspect of our cosmology wherein the nature of the inhabitants of the west are defined as the dead. People living in the west and functioning like we read about the Martu or Meratu, they're living in a self-destructive, disordered lifestyle. The people who actually died and went, their spirits went to the west, of course, and became Meru or afflicted dead, they were also spirits of disorder or operating in a disordered fashion. So, and then we mentioned here, the designation Meri, Neri, meaning the dead land, was carried by our people from Kemet wherever we migrated. This is why the later kingdom of Neri or Mari or Mare, geographically to the extreme west of Kemet, bears this title. It was the Greeks and Romans who began to use the terms Neri or Mari to refer not only to the people of the Numidian kingdom of that time, Mauritania, 2,200, 2,300 years ago, but to black people in general. The Greeks, Romans, and later Arabs were familiar with the root of the name Mari being the term Maru or Meru, the dead, the damned, and its origins in Kemet, where they had invaded Kemet, occupied Kemet for centuries and learned of the language, including this term. The Greek and Roman invaders of Kemet not only began to imitate the dress, statecraft, and ritual practices of the Kamal, but also misused the language. So, of course, they dressed like us. They put on the headdresses. They built temples, ordered temples to be built. They tried to use the Medutu, the Ptolemies, and the Greeks, and later, you know, the Romans and so forth, even the Persians before them. They were imitating us, imitating our dress, imitating us with the deities and so forth, putting their faces in the places of deities, but they also misused the language. So, as stated previously, the white invaders took the term Mer, plural Meru, that was a pejorative designation for a certain class of society in Kemet, the slaves, the bondsmen, and so forth, and then they used that pejorative title for the entirety of black people in general. They just wanted to call all of us slaves. So they found the term for slave, socially dead or mentally dead individual in the language of Kemet, and they used that term to label all black people that. The same term used for the spiritually disordered, deceased, they used that term to label all black people dead. Just like some black people will label a crackhead, a mentally dead individual, some white people come back and say, well, all black people are mentally dead. They just use it as a pejorative for everybody. So we go into detail about that. All right, so. Okay, so I'm just looking at the comments real quick. Make sure I didn't miss anything. Okay, somebody asked if I would come speak to a group of Moors. Yeah, I'll come speak to them. All of them already have the article because they slipped out when the article came out, and they have been scrambling ever since to try to, you know, hide that information. Some of them knew about the term Mer, meaning slave and vassal and so forth. They've been hiding that information for a while, and they were hoping nobody would ever investigate it. What they did not have is how all these seven definitions of the term Moor, not only all seven exist in the language of Kemet with the exact same meaning, but the cosmology that unites all seven terms into the same cosmology, which points to the fact that Mer is the root meaning dead for all of these terms, whether it's a dead land, wasteland, swampy land, a collection of water that floods or submerges or buries the land, being moored or tied to a ship, or a ship being tied or moored to a post, the like your body being moored. People in Kemet call somebody who died someone who had arrived in port just like a ship being mer or moored. They would call that person mer and death mer and death cry mer and all these different things. Love and death, the heart stopping because of the mer, because of the affection, becomes dead mer, and it does until it resurrects, it's in a dead state. All those different things tied to the cosmology, of course, they had no knowledge of or no understanding of, because Moors don't understand cosmology. That's why they're Moors. If they weren't embracing pseudo-Eurocentric, pseudo-spirituality, they would easily have a knowledge of cosmology. But they've embraced nonsense, so they have no understanding of cosmology, so they couldn't even perceive that through those definitions. They just found out that mer means slave, mer means dead, mer means wretched, mer means afflicted and damned, and they did everything they could to hide those definitions from the people. It's too late now, of course. So we can talk about that. If they want to talk, we can talk about that. We'll get some information out there. And like I said, we've had many people have contacted us who used to be Moors, and they left the nonsense alone once they got the real information. So that's always a good development, and it's going to continue. Okay. Right, you said it's shallow how Moors use all kinds of etymological dictionaries, but not the Medusa, because they can't, because that's when they get exposed. So they have to stay in, you know, Eurocentric, dictionaries that only stop at Proto-Indo-European pseudo roots of terms. Okay. Now, just going through these comments, the rest of these comments. All right, I just want to make sure I didn't miss anything. Okay. Somebody asked about sovereign and nation and trees and everything, and why not all of our people? Most of them, there are different factions of these groups, and all of them are misinformed. Some of them think they come from Asia. They don't come from Afurak, Afurak, Kaid. Other ones think they come from ancient America. Some of them think they come from the island, the mythological island of Mu or Atlantis. Some of the fools think that they're extraterrestrial. But none of them say they come from Afurak, Afurak, Kaid. So the fake little treaties they're talking about has to do with the whites and their offspring, and they're trying to clamp on to some nonsense created by the whites and their offspring simply to enslave the minds of our people. And obviously it worked for a very minute percentage of our people for the past 100 years. They've been around teaching this nonsense for 100 years. Nobody really ever cared. It's only a tiny percentage of them, less than 1%, 0.1% of our people were involved in that nonsense. People gave them a pass because nobody really cared anyway. Recently, over the past couple of years, two things happened. They got some attention that they never got before because of these nonsensical pseudo-debates. But the other thing commensurate that is that for the first time, people started to scrutinize them and actually examine the nonsense they were teaching and begin to ridicule and clown them and expose them for the nonsense that they've been teaching. They never had that kind of scrutiny before because most people just ignored them because they had no effect on the community for the past 100 years. They've been around, but nobody cared. But now that they started getting some attention, with all that attention comes scrutiny. And they've never been scrutinized before, and now they've been really scrutinized. And this is why it's the end of the road for them, as well as, you know, they're crumbling. And the same thing with, you know, Hebrews and people in the Nation of Islam and other forms of Islam and Sufism and all this nonsense. People were not scrutinizing them before because most people never cared. But now people are actually scrutinizing the information and exposing the fact that none of these biblical characters and Quranic characters or information in the Bhagavad Gita and all these other things, none of them are real. Their doctrines are foolish, and people are not giving them a pass. People are not, quote-unquote, respecting them anymore. People are clowning them, they're ridiculing them, they're exposing them, and they are cutting them off. which is good. It's a good development. It was just a matter of time anyway. Okay. Last question. Somebody said, you speak of cosmology. How does it compare to astrology? Is there an African astrology? Yes. So the of course, when you read about the Ptolemies and they were had maps like the Dendera, so-called zodiac and things like that, astrology, what is referred to as astrology, of course, came from our people. So the whites in the Arab Spring, when they invaded the so-called Near East, when they invaded Kemet, they saw that we were mapping out the skies, knew the movements of the stars, and we have different names for them and everything else. But we also knew the divinities that animated these celestial bodies. And just like you're a spirit that animates your physical body and makes it move, and a dog is a spirit that animates his physical body, the Aten, the sun, the earth mother, the rivers, as well as other stars, these are physical entities that are animated by forces in nature. Constellations connected to forces in nature. So when you connect with the force in nature, then you're doing something. If you're just mapping out some constellations and giving some, you know, information based on how you believe people act based on that, then that's not really the science that we were working with. Weiss and Alspring saw a skeleton of something, and they just repeated some things, but they were never connecting with the divinity. So you can look in the sky, and you can see a constellation. It can have influence, but it's not necessarily determinative. The forces in nature that determine what kind of nature you have and what your function in the world is are those who are born with you and who were assigned to you pre-incarnation and who came into the world with you, connected to your Kra, your Okrawa, your Ka, your Kaed, your soul, your divine consciousness. So those are the divinities that govern you. Other forces in nature are influential, but they are not determinant with regard to your behavior and your destiny. Your destiny or your life focus is based on the deity that was assigned to you pre-incarnation and connected to your Ori. So we get into that in detail in the book, The Okra Okra Complex, The Soul of Akanfo, and as well as the video associated with the book. All right, so if there's no, I think one call. Michiawo, you had a question or a comment?
Michiawo, brother, Kwesi Iheanacho. I had a question, but it might, maybe, I don't know if you can wait till next week because you've been going in. But I did want to talk about the word Kemet and then how the Matutu does not have the determinative for the color black. In reference to the black land, and you might cover that in some of your work already, but I don't know. Maybe that could be something that we could start with in that for the part two of this session, because you have been going in.
Okay. Right. Okay. Yeah, so the term Kemet. First and foremost, it has to do with cosmology. So when you look at the titles of Al-Sar, he's called Kam Or, meaning the great black one. He's not the great irrigated one or the livable land one. He's a force in nature, and his skin is black. In the Meru or text, or Meru text, or pyramid text of Teta, he's called Kam Or the great black one. But also, in the same text, he's also referred to as Watch Or. Or meaning great, watch meaning green, the great green one. So you will see Al-Sar depicted with the wrappings, the mummified wrappings, the white crown very often, but he'll either have black skin or green skin. He's called Watch Or because his skin is green. It has to do with resurrection and fertility and so forth. He has black skin because his skin is black. It's ancestral. It has to do with power and so forth. Now, the black soil substance is the black land, Kemet. The red soil is the desert as well as the red clay. It has to do with people who are Kamau, black people, are dark brown people with red undertones. We mentioned that before, and the red people are dark brown people with black red undertones. So that's why we showed a picture of a Maasai woman, dark brown with red undertones, a Serer woman. We show others as well, dark brown with black undertones. These are the reds and the blacks. Talking about skin color, names of men. In our Khan, we also have the red and the black. In the Oyoko clan, the Oyoko Abusia, you have the Oyoko Koko and the Oyoko Tuntun, the red Oyoko and the black Oyoko. Dark brown people with red undertones, dark brown people with black undertones. These are two royal lineages. The red Oyoko people, the black Oyoko people. When they're connected with the Asase Koko and Asase Tuntun. Asase means earth. Asase Koko is the red earth. Asase Tuntun is the black earth. So the red and black Oyoko people are connected with Asase Koko, the red earth, or Asase Tuntun, the black earth. So when you see pictures of Nubians or Nkosu or Nahetsu and Nkosu, and you see them standing side by side with one another, and some of them are reddish-brown and some of them are black, these are the ancient Kanat people or Kanit people. In our Khan culture today, you still have the reds and the blacks. It has nothing to do with miscegenation. It has to do with being connected with the deity of the desert and the red land. You have that hot, dry, fiery energy. It manifests in your temperament. It also manifests in your phenotype and your morphological structure. You connect it with the divinity. It's connected with the more cool black energy. It manifests in your temperament, but it also manifests in your phenotype as well. So the reds and the blacks exist, and it has to do with skin color. It has to do with the land and all of that. When you deal with the determinative, some will say, well, this is just a crocodile tail. It's a crocodile's paw. Also, a burning piece of charcoal. And then some have dismissed the burning piece of charcoal and just say it's a crocodile's tail or crocodile's paw. One of the determinatives is a crocodile's tail, literally, and it's directly related to the crocodile. We're talking about the land flooding or being submerged. And we talked about how the whole country is submerged. And then when the water begins to recede, the first thing that you see is the tips of the highlands sticking out. You start to see the emergence of the highest points of the land, little mountains or little mounds starting to emerge from the receding water. And it reminded people of the first time when the whole earth, the Septepi, when the whole earth was covered by water, and Ra caused the first landmass to rise up out of the water. And that water recedes and the points of the highlands show up and the points of the hills show up. That's the emergence of that black land, that calm ore, the black land, the black, soil substance that would emerge when the waters recede. When you see the crocodile, he lives in water, as the Akan say, Odenshim Datin Suo, Mu Unso. Ahome, Mframa, the crocodile lives in water but breathes air, not water. You see the crocodile swimming in the water. The only thing you see, though, is his nose and his eyes, right? So as he's swimming in the water, you don't see his body. You see his nose and his eyes. But then he starts to emerge from the water, just like the black land emerging from the receding water. That's why you have the crocodile's tail representing the black substance rising up from the receding water, just like the black god who was buried and submerged in the water. When the water recedes, he begins to rise up, and his body rises up out of the black water. The black soil rises up from the inundation. So there is a connection between that black tail of the crocodile and the word can. But there's also another determinative, which really is a burning piece of charcoal. Some people said, oh, that's not really a burning piece of charcoal. That's actually the paw of a crocodile. Only the problem with that is, in Akan, we have the burning piece of charcoal with the same name. and it's related to a specific people. So we're going to go into that. From the Akwamu people came the Jamain people, Jama people, or the Kama people, and Ja means fire, Jam means within the fire, meaning burning in black, Jama means coal or anthracite, black coal, burning coal,